BBC WM
95.6.
Teachers, if you don't like it, get out of it.
Pensioners who can't do anything to boost her income.
Abduction? As far as I'm aware, she actually went willingly.
Ian Lee, Saturdays.
9 till 12. BBC WM
95.6.
Morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6, filling in for Nick Conrad. Don't panic. Don't panic, Mr. Mannering. It's not a permanent replacement. It's just for a few weeks. Nick has had the cheek to not only fall in love, but to propose to someone and then actually carry it through to its logical conclusion and get married. Wow. Well, congratulations, Nick. I hope you're having a fantastic day. 9 o'clock on my wedding day. What a tense time that was. What an exciting yet tense time that was. I'm sure he's having a wonderful time. I'm filling in for 4 weeks, so please be nice to me. You can be a little bit rude if you want. The way this is going to work is this show is going to be completely dependent on you calling in and talking to me. If you don't call in over the next 3 hours, boy, oh boy, it's going to be awkward. It's going to be some bloke sat in a studio talking to himself. So I do need you to give us a call. The phone number, you know it better than me. 08453 00956. Lots that we're talking about between now and 12 o'clock. We're talking about the negotiations with the Taliban. We're talking about 20 miles per hour speed limits. We're also talking about overrated bands. I'll throw this one out there now and you can kind of start responding to this. Overrated bands. There's been such a furore, and that's how you pronounce that word, about the Rolling Stones playing Glastonbury. Oh, the Rolling Stones are playing Glastonbury. Oh, how? Who cares? Really? Who cares? The Rolling Stones were one of the luckiest bands of the 1960s. They were. They had three good songs. Angie, You Can't Always Get What You Want, and Wild Horses. And from that, they made a career that's lasted about 50 years, something like that. I just do not get the Rolling Stones. So this morning, as kind of a side thing, as we're doing a few heavy bits and pieces, as kind of a side thing, I'd like to... Can we get a top 10 list of bands that you don't get, but everybody else raves about? I've got a friend, Dougie. And the arguments we've had into the night about the merits or lack of the Rolling Stones are incredible. And I know it's blasphemy to some people, but they are a terrible band. Really? Keith Richards, I mean, at best, he's an adequate guitar player. 08453 00956. You can also send me a text as well, 81333. Start your text WM. Let's get a top 10 list by midday, if we can, of overrated bands. Got some other bits and pieces that some may consider slightly more serious. There's lots in the papers today about Moore's murderer, Ian Brady. And I guess the question is, would we be better off if Moore's murderer, Ian Brady, was allowed to kill himself? There's a letter has been released in which he claims to have killed four more people. That letter's been published for the first time today. In the 7-page letter written by Brady in 1989, he says he killed two men in his native Glasgow and then killed a man and a woman in Manchester, where he and Myra Hindley abducted and murdered five children in the 1960s. Well, the letter was part of a series of correspondence between the notorious child killer and former local journalist Brendan Pittaway, and was published in the Daily Telegraph. Of course, you'll have heard on the news that yesterday Brady lost his legal attempt to be transferred from a maximum security hospital back to jail. He wanted to go to, in inverted commas, a normal jail so he could basically kill himself. He wants to starve himself to death, he claims. And because of this ruling yesterday, he can't do that. He has to stay in a mental hospital for the rest of his life, which could be a long time. Now, part of me thinks we're spending 300 grand a year on keeping this bloke alive, when really, maybe we should let him kill himself. But there is a bigger part of me, a slightly more overriding part of me, that thinks, well, he obviously doesn't want to be alive. He's obviously suffering. He's obviously not enjoying his existence. So that's good then, isn't it? That's kind of the punishment that he deserves. Can you give me a call on this? My thoughts are slightly unclear, and I would like you to help me clarify them slightly. 08453 00956. Would we be better off if Moore's murderer, Ian Brady, was allowed to kill himself? Costs a lot of money to keep him in prison, to keep him alive, about 300 grand a year, thereabouts. But he is suffering. And it sounds slightly flippant, but if you didn't want to suffer, you shouldn't have killed those kiddies in the 60s. You know? And wasn't he unpleasant? The transcripts of his defence, is that the right word, in court this week, where he kind of almost waved off the murders of those children in 63, 64? Oh, minor crimes. Just small. It made it sound like it was a sport that he'd indulged in once. Terrible. Terrible man. Well, what do you think? There's always, when Brady gets mentioned, there's always the call, oh, let's bring back execution, shall we? I don't know if we can go down that route. I'm sure some of you might want to, and you're more than welcome to this morning, 08453 009956. But what would you like to see happen to Ian Brady? Do you think we should let him go off and starve himself, if that's what he wants to do? Although there were claims this week that for breakfast he makes himself a couple of slices of toast. Oh, that's a good hunger strike. Oh, yeah, I'm on hunger strike, but I'll have a little bit of toast. And according to those who were in court this week, what is he, 74, 75, something like that, he didn't look that frail for someone who's been on hunger strike for so long. He looked quite sprightly, in fact, quite chunky for an elderly man who is supposedly only being fed by a tube that's shoved up his nose. So what would you like to see happen to Ian Brady? Should we let him kill himself? Or should we keep him in prison and let him suffer? 08453 009956. Later on in the show, we'll be speaking to Brendan Pittaway, who's the journalist who had about, I think it's something like, I had him on Drive yesterday. He had about 30 letters with Ian Brady. And what I found fascinating was the very sort of calm way he discusses Brady. It was fascinating. He was on for a few minutes on Drive yesterday. We've got him on today. And I thought it was fascinating. So, the question to you, dear listener, and I do need your help on this, because quite often I know exactly what I'm thinking and I know what my point of view is and I will stick with it. This one, I'm not sure I do know what my point of view is with this. I need a little help clarifying it. Lots of ways you can get in touch this morning, and again, this is 3 hours, so if you don't call in, it's literally going to be me sitting in a studio talking to myself. Huh? You wouldn't want to do that to me, would you? You can text 81333, start your text WM. You can tweet at BBCWN. The best way, of course, though, is to give us a phone call. It's nice to have a chat about these things. And one of the joys of doing a show on a Saturday morning like this is it's kind of a little bit more time to roam around these topics and have a discussion. 08453 009956. We will be quantum leaping around a lot of these topics this morning. So please don't be offended. We're going from Ian Brady to talking about overrated bands, and Alan in Cotteridge has called in. Morning, Alan.
Morning, Ian. It's good to hear you on WM.
It's good to hear you on WM as well, Alan.
How's Fandango?
Fandango, for those who are not in the know, and there's no reason you should, Fandango is my wife, and she is absolutely marvellous, partly because I spent the night in a hotel last night in Birmingham, Alan, away from her, and therefore she didn't have to put up with me stomping around the house with my heavy boots. Overrated bands, Alan. The Rolling Stones are playing Glastonbury. I'm guessing you're not going to Glastonbury this weekend.
No, I'll be watching on the BBC.
Well, fantastic. Good for you. Are you a fan of the Rolling Stones?
Well, I like Jumping Jack Flash, and I can't get no satisfaction.
Can't you? But are you a fan of the Rolling Stones?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I see. That was one of their songs you were talking about.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Are there any bands, Alan, that everybody else raves about and you just don't get at all?
I'm drinking 10cc.
10cc? Does everybody rave about 10cc these days?
Well, when they were first out with their hit, big hit, Dreadlock Holiday,
yes,
everyone was raving about them. But unfortunately, they were around when I was born in 1930, and I just didn't get them at the time.
No, no. And it's still frustrating you today, isn't it, Alan?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's upsetting you. I can understand that. I tell you another band I don't get, and I'm going to speak blasphemy here at BBC WM. This is going to throw a cat amongst the reggae pigeons. I don't like UB40. No, I know. Oh, within 15 minutes, he's offended every listener. I don't like UB40. I know they're local boys, But I just, everybody, UB40, they are, Alan, apparently, the most successful reggae band in the world.
Yeah, they are. Can I just leave on one final note?
I'd rather you didn't, but I suspect you're going to. Okay, Alan, if I had the technology to cut him off, there we do. I do. Thank you very much, Alan. No idea what that was about at all. I know it's blasphemous to say it, isn't it? But UB40, that bland white reggae. Oh, there's a rat in my kitchen. What am I going to do? No doubt write a really boring song about it. Just awful. And please, don't take offence at this. If you want to phone up and defend the UB of the 40, I'm getting such dirty looks from the team here at BBC WM. Have I broken an unwritten rule? Don't diss the 40. Oh, gosh. I won't be back next week. Dear Nick, could you please come off of your honeymoon early? The gentleman we had filling in for you was absolutely blooming awful. 08453-009-56 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. I do apologise. Look at me chatting away. Of course, we should go and find out what's happening on the road, shouldn't we? Let's go to the travel and see what's happening. Morning, this is Ian Lee filling in for Nick Conrad. It's only for 4 weeks. Don't panic. I know whenever... I'm a big fan of radio, and when my regular presenter is not there, a little bit of me dies. Don't. It's only for a few weeks. He's off getting married. How selfish. No, hang on, not selfish, the opposite. How generous of him to share his life with someone else. Have a lovely day. Like you'll be listening to this. I'm sure it's getting married. What an exciting day that is. You can give me a call this morning. Please do. It'd be nice to talk to you. 08453-009-56. Lots of things we're talking about. But the question I'm asking you now, would we be better off if Moore's murderer, Ian Brady, was allowed to kill himself? A letter in which he claims to have killed 4 more people has been published for the first time. It's in the Telegraph and it's in the Mirror. I've also got bits of it as well. In the 7-page letter written by Brady in 1989, he said he'd killed 2 men in his native Glasgow and then killed a man and a woman in Manchester, where he and his partner, Myra Hindley, abducted and murdered 5 children in the 60s. The letter was part of a series of correspondence between the notorious child killer and former local journalist Brendan Pittaway, and was published in the Daily Telegraph. Well, yesterday, of course, Brady lost his legal attempt to be transferred from a maximum security hospital back to jail. Would love to get your views on this. I don't think it's that clear-cut. Normally, with things like this, I know what the answer is. With this one, I'm kind of sitting in 2 camps. I need a little bit of persuasion. What do you think should be done with Ian Brady? Should he be allowed to kill himself? Or should he suffer in prison? Do give us a call this morning, please. 08453-009956. Well, the journalist that exchanged several letters with Ian Brady is Brendan Pittaway. He joins me now. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning.
Could I have a little bit of background to this, Brendan? How did you start exchanging letters with Ian Brady?
Well, I was working for a freelance news agency, an agency that generates stories for national print and broadcast media back in the late 1980s. And there was a journalist who had been exchanging correspondence with Brady because, of course, a freelance news agency generates stories by selling them. And bearing in mind that Ashworth was on the sort of editorial patch, the news patch for that agency, he had discovered that Mercury Press, the agency concerned, had written a number of stories, and in response to some of those stories, had picked up his pen and written his sort of version of events, and so that correspondence had been started. When that reporter moved on to another job, I inherited that correspondence, and then Brady kept continuing a correspondence with me over the course of the next 3 years as I moved on to several jobs within the BBC.
And what did you think when you sat at your new desk and someone says, right, Brendan, you're going to be writing to Ian Brady? What goes through your mind?
Well, I was fortunate enough, I suppose, not to have been born when Brady was incarcerated for the offences. And so I suppose the stigma, I was aware of the crimes and I was aware of their place, if you like, in criminal notoriety in Britain, but they didn't mean as much to me as perhaps somebody who'd been born and was very much, you know, conscious when Brady and Hindley were doing their evil deeds. But certainly, to me, it was another job. I know that since news of my So correspondence with Brady has emerged. People have wondered whether I might be some sort of Moore's obsessive. But, you know, as you will know, journalists tend to cover various stories and then move on to other topics. It's not as though they tend to stick with us for any length of time. And when you move on to other jobs and other stories, then, as with these letters, the correspondence, the material related to those topics is filed away and put in the attic, which is why these letters had been, if you like, out of my reach for so long, because it's only with the resurgence, the renewed interest in the Brady case last year, that I actually went digging for them and found the letters in the last few months.
We'll get to the content in a second, Brendan. I am just fascinated, because there will be people who are listening to this who are, I guess, kind of disgusted, you know, that you have been in correspondence. I was wondering if any members of your family, who were perhaps slightly older, parents or grandparents, when you went home and said, this is the new assignment I've got, if they kind of tutted and said anything at the time?
Yes, they did, actually. Mm. But it wasn't necessarily a new assignment. It was just one story of many that any journalist will cover. And certainly I remember bringing home on one occasion one of the letters, and one of my sisters was physically ill because she knew, if you like, the resonance. She was a couple of years older than me. She knew more particularly and was more revulsed by seeing Brady's writing and his signature, holding a piece of paper that he himself had written upon. But it wasn't necessarily anything more than another job.
Mm.
And so I was one of many journalists with whom Brady corresponded, some for very short periods of time, others for far longer than I was exchanging letters with him.
And what were you hoping to achieve from these exchanges?
Well, that's the point. It was an exchange. I suppose from Brady's point of view, one of the subtexts to the correspondence was that he, as in correspondence with other journalists and also letters to the authorities and the evidence that he gave to his mental health tribunal on Tuesday of this week, was trying to shape almost his perception in the media. He is well aware of the impact, the theatrical impact, as he described it, of the offences which he and Hindley committed in the early to mid-1960s. From my point of view, like other journalists, I was trying to discover, if you like, to gather fresh evidence, to try and kick the story on, and ultimately to see if it was possible to resolve the issue of Keith Bennett's body, the last of the five victims of Hindley and Brady yet to be found.
And he did, I'm looking, I've got the Telegraph story in front of me now, and he did give some information about Keith Bennett's body, didn't he? He said the police were looking in the wrong place.
Yes, well, I actually got one of the letters here. I mean, you were quite right earlier on. I received something like 36 letters from Brady over the course of around about three and a half years. And he touched on the issue of Keith Bennett in a number of them. One which I have here, in fact, it's the letter which is published in the Daily Telegraph. He says, as for Keith Bennett, the area of the site is in Yorkshire, not Lancashire, not is underlined, and should have been dealt with by the Yorkshire Police. He said, I have already stated my readiness to questioning under sodium pentothal, as he put it, sodium pentothal is the real name of the drug, which he described as a truth drug, but not by the Manchester Police. He said, I am in a more pragmatic situation. I am a patient, not a prisoner, and a resident in a hospital with the proper facilities and supervision for such an operation. When it came to his involvement, his engagement with Chief Superintendent Peter Topping, the officer from Greater Manchester Police who led the renewed, reopened search for what were then two outstanding bodies, Pauline Reed and Keith Bennett, in the mid-1980s, he said, I did not intend to discuss the cases or conduct public relations exercises to please the Home Office or the Parole Board. My sole aim and function was to locate sites as quickly as possible.
There is some dispute, isn't there, when he talks about where this should have been dealt with the Yorkshire Police, that the boundaries changed, didn't they, as to whether it was part of Yorkshire or part of somewhere else. So he could be confused around that.
Indeed, and obviously that could have some bearing as on his ability, regardless of his absolute willingness, his ability to locate the graves. Mm. Because Certainly in the case of 1974, when the boundaries changed and what was in Yorkshire or West Yorkshire became part of Lancashire, and of course Lancashire became, or part of Lancashire became, Greater Manchester.
What's interesting is looking at the few lines of the letters that are in the Daily Telegraph, and I don't know what I expected. He's got normal handwriting. He's got very neat handwriting. I don't know if I expected it to be, you know, done in red crayon or what, but it looks like very sensible, very tidy, very normal handwriting.
It is, but one of the things that is apparent through the course of not just the one letter which you may have looked at, but the dozens of letters which I received from him, is that even though the writing itself, the style of writing, this very close, neat script which slants to the right, and the ordering on the page, even though that is consistent across all of the correspondence, it is still possible to determine his state of mind when he's writing. For instance, when he's in control of his emotions, the sentences are quite short, the language is very measured. But you can tell when he is getting angry because the paragraphs stretch to pages. There's plenty of references to cranks and conspiracies and lying. And you can tell, it's almost as though the sense or the sentiment is almost bursting from the page. And so you can get a sense of a man who is losing it in much the same way as towards the end of his evidence on Tuesday. He was accused of rambling because he had lost the thread. It's almost as though he found the concentration required to keep up the act, this theatrical performance almost, of his evidence on Tuesday. He couldn't sustain that across the course of 4 hours.
So he can focus and look sane for short bursts, but when it's an extended period, that he can't keep that facade up.
I think that's the case from what, not necessarily I have interpreted, if you like, from the correspondence, and others have done so from his appearance in person on Tuesday, but what the psychiatrists who were giving evidence on behalf of Ashworth Hospital were suggesting was the case. You know, here is a man, they maintain, who is lucid for periods, but still suffers from an acute psychotic condition, and therefore is still, in their words, a danger to himself and to others, and were he transferred back to the mainstream prison population, whatever his specific intent, and he says he has a game plan, he would quite possibly deteriorate far quickly than might otherwise be the case at Ashworth.
If you just tuned in, this is Ian Lee, filling in for Nick Conrad. It's BBC WM. I'm talking to Brendan Pittaway, who exchanged over 30 letters with Moore's murderer, Ian Brady. The big front page story, well, it's in the Telegraph and it's the front page of the Mirror that's come out of your letters, Brendan, is Brady's claim that he killed more people than than people suspected.
Yes, the interesting thing is that this is not necessarily new, in that he had told Detective Chief Superintendent Peter Topping of other cases, and they were investigated at the time, according to Topping, in Topping's own autobiography. And I also raised the matters with both Strathclyde Police and Greater Manchester, and they said that they had examined them, there was not enough substance. But I'll quote, if I may, the passages to which you refer, which may, if you like, go to the heart of what both the Telegraph, the Mirror and others have covered this morning. Brady writes, "The two murders I told them have committed in Manchester, the man on the waste ground behind the station and the woman in the canal, which I detailed to Topping. He said a mentally retarded man had confessed to the first but was not charged, and that the second had been treated as suicide, though there was no note. This, in police parlance, says Brady, is known as, quotes, fitting up or clearing the books. Therefore, my statements were an embarrassment to the police, who, rather than admit irregularities had taken place, will move mountains to cover up." Now, in terms of one of those killings, the woman in the canal, as he described her, he actually went on to refer to that in a number of other letters, one of which he said, same applies to Manchester Police, particularly in treating the woman in the canal as a, quote, suicide, despite the absence of his suicide note and the presence of a bruise on her head. Now, he also added in the sort of principal letter, if you like, the letter in which he supposedly confessed to offences. I wrote a statement, 4 pages of foolscap in length, to the Strathclyde police, re the murder in Glasgow and the second above Loch Long. The absurd responses from Topping to this was, A, re the man in Glasgow, records don't go back that far. B, re the man above Loch Long, there is no record of a missing person. If you check with the Home Office, you will find that an average of 20,000 people a year go missing in Britain. Therefore, I believe that Topping, by making such absurd statements, was concerned only in keeping other police chiefs at bay and protecting his exclusive deal with his publishers. Now, as I mentioned, I had raised the allegations with Strathclyde Police and Greater Manchester Police as well, and they said simply that there was no substance. Now, bearing in mind the letters have, if you like, resurfaced, have provided fresh reason for inquiry, what the police have said in both cases is that, look, if we have additional detail, we will look further, but these are historic cases, and when we looked into them at the time they first surfaced, we didn't think there was enough substance to progress them as valid or viable investigations.
What do you think, Brendan? Did he commit more murders? Do you believe what he says in those letters?
I think only Ian Brady, or as he always signed himself, patient 490 Ian Stewart Brady, I think only he knows. Or certainly he would say that he and possibly Myra Hindley know, because there was another letter in which he said, I'm just cut to the correct paragraph, where he says, Hindley, decided to cut her losses, and this is at the time where she confesses that she had participated in the killings of Pauline Reed and Keith Bennett as well, and reluctantly confessed to direct participation in at least 5 of the murders. Now, he's used the words in at least 5, so he is inferring or suggesting by that use of words that maybe he and Hindley together had committed more than the 5 offences for which they have gone down in British criminal history. As to whether I think Brady actually committed the murders to which he is confessing, if you like, I think there's very little direct evidence apart from what he says himself. Certainly, the police in both Strathclyde and in Greater Manchester say they've looked at the suggestions, the allegations, and have found no reason to proceed with a full inquiry. One of the interesting things about serial killers, if you speak to criminologists as I did at the time that I was receiving these letters, is that some serial killers like to aggrandise. They like to make themselves more important to try and generate more fear, more respect, make themselves more important in the eyes both of the public, media, and also the individuals with whom they're sharing prisons or secure hospitals, as in Brady's case. So maybe he has added or exaggerated to the total of murders which he actually committed in order to make himself look more important. But I think that only Brady himself will know without a fuller investigation by police both north and south of the Scottish border.
Brendan Pittaway, thanks very much for joining me. Absolutely fascinating. Brendan Pittaway there, who's a journalist who had corresponded with Ian Brady for several years in the 80s as part of his work. He's saying there they exchanged about 35, 36 letters. And if you want to see some of the letters, you can go to The Telegraph, page 15. It's also on the front page of the Daily Mirror. I don't think the Mirror actually print any of the actual writing. But, I mean, the headline is, Ian Brady may have killed more people that we know about. Well, the question I'm asking you this morning, would we be better off if Moore's murderer, Ian Brady, was allowed to kill himself? What do you think should happen? I don't quite know the answer to this. Listen, I'm not one for capital punishment. Is it capital or corporal? Which is, I can never remember. Anyway, the one where you get hung. Capital, it is capital, isn't it? I don't necessarily buy into that. I guess the options here are we let him go to a normal prison and kill himself, or we leave him in a mental hospital and force feed him for, well, I don't know, it could be another 10, 15 years. 08453 009956. Would we be better off if Moore's murderer, Ian Brady, was allowed to kill himself? Let's go to Terry. Morning, Terry. Oh, no, I've put you there. I've put in the wrong thing. Morning, Terry.
Morning.
Terry, what do you think should happen?
I think I should like to get rid of poker and shove it somewhere in Brady. I think he's one of the most evil men that's ever set foot on the earth. And I certainly do think that he should be put down. Or if he, like he says, he wants to commit suicide, all he's got to do is pull that thing from around his neck himself, and he could do. He doesn't want to commit suicide. He just wants to play everybody against one another. Actually, he's really enjoying what he's doing at the moment. This is what he's like. He's really excited about this. He's got everybody talking about him and listening and analysing every word he says. And really, he should be shoved in a dark room and just left. And nobody should talk to him or ask him anything. And if he wants to commit suicide, which he doesn't, because he could do it anyway with that feed there, all he's got to do is every time they fit it up to him, pull it off.
Well, I think the thing about the tube that goes up his nose and feeds him, I think if he were to pull it out, he would be, you know, he would be restrained, and they would just keep fitting it again. And I imagine that's quite a painful process. But I agree with you that he's enjoyed this week, hasn't he? This moment in the spotlight.
We've got people in hospitals now that are really good people in hospitals now that can't be looked after quick enough because we haven't got enough nurses and doctors. And yet those doctors been mulling over that. Well, I'm going to say animal. He's not an animal. I don't know a word in the English language to call him. For what he did to filming those children as he was killing them and they was crawling on their hands and knees. And we're actually listening to him. One of the worst things we're doing in this country now is actually listening to him. The people, nobody should listen to him. They should lock him up and just forget about him. If you don't, I mean, I do believe a person like him should have been hung a long time ago, whether you believe in capital punishment for how evil and wicked he was.
But the thing is, Terry, the argument against killing him is he's suffering now, isn't he? By being alive,
yes,
he's suffering. So if you kill him now, you end his suffering. So his punishment has ended. His punishment is now continuing.
That's what I say. You should push him in a dark room and leave him. You shouldn't let him do anything. You shove him in a dark room. Don't talk to him. Don't listen to him. Let him live in his own filth. Because that might sound awful and terrible, but for a person like him, it's not. He's a wicked. The families have nearly all died now. The mothers and dads of them kids there. And still he played them along. He wouldn't tell them where he was. He was still in command. And that's what that bloke wants to be. He wants to be in command. He wanted to be in command of those kids, decide when their life was ended. Brady was going to decide that, and Brady's going to decide all this now. And we're still listening to him.
Terry, thanks very much for your call. It's nice to talk to you. Terry and Coseley there, who's got very strong views. 08453 00 9956. The argument against killing him is quite a strong one, I think. I don't believe in capital punishment per se. I don't particularly want to go down that should we bring it back route. But the argument against killing him is he's obviously suffering right now. So that's the punishment, isn't it? If he's miserable and if we believe what he says, that he wants to die, then that's the punishment. If you kill him, it's over. The punishment's ended. 08453 00 9956. Let's go to Andy in Hellzone. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, mate.
What do you think? Would we be better off if Brady was allowed to kill himself?
He should have been hung in the 60s, shouldn't he? You know, don't get me started on this. We had this issue with Nick a few months ago. I lived through it. I was 20, 21. And you telling me that you don't believe in capital punishment? Where do you come from, my mate? How can you define when he's killing little kiddies and typing the screams as I'm shouting for the mummy and daddy? How can you define that? How can you define it? It's all right you having these men on now and doing this and that from the 80s. It should have been done in the 60s. This man is a criminal. He's an it. He should have been hung there and then when he was found beyond reasonable doubt, same as the slot he was with. They should have been hung there and then when they was found guilty beyond reasonable doubt. Don't come here telling me you don't believe in punishment when this man, and as this fella just said a few minutes ago, that he could have killed other people. I did read about that way back in the 70s, maybe. But don't come in, you don't believe in capital punishment. And this man, I do agree with your previous caller, he's enjoying the limelight, he's loving it, and this man is still making headlines today as he was then, in the 60s. I cannot believe it. I really can't, mate. I really can't. I don't know what this country's coming to. I really don't. It's absolutely appalling what's happening, especially with this man. He's an animal. He should have been killed, he should have been shot, he should have been hung, he should have been gassed in the 63, 64, when he done all these little kiddies murders. We lived through it.
I know, Andy, listen, and that's what I'd like to ask about. I can hear, the passion and...
It's not the passion. You shouldn't... This man shouldn't keep being talked about. It's on the news, it's on the radio.
What I'd like to ask you, Andy...
I'm talking about it. It's criminal, mate. It's absolutely criminal. If you've got children, you look at your little kiddies and think what it'd have been like if you'd have had one of them and tape recorded one of them when he was killing them.
Andy, I can tell that you are very excited. I just like just calm down, have a slightly rational situation.
Calm down. I can remember it.
This is what I want to ask you, Andy. This is what I want to ask you for younger listeners who weren't around in the mid 60s when this story broke and don't quite know what it was like in the 60s. Did you say you were in your 20s when this happened?
2021.
What was the atmosphere like when the story about the Moors murders was breaking in the mid 60s?
Exactly what I'm telling you now. Everybody, it was absolutely criminal. It really was. The country was at a standstill. They didn't let the kids go out and play. Where I lived up Blackheath at the time, you didn't let your children go out. What was going on in this country? You'll have to excuse me. I do find it odd, really, sometimes when I get agitated like this to put my words together.
No, you're expressing yourself very well, and I appreciate you doing that.
You can't explain it. You have to live for it. But I just want you, please, just to tell me how you can come on the radio and say that you don't believe in capital punishment.
Because very briefly, because we have executed innocent people by mistake, that's why.
Well, not this one.
But we can't. I don't want to do the capital punishment.
You heard what I've just said a minute.
I know. But we cannot bring back capital punishment because in the past we have executed innocent people. That's why it proves it's a flawed system.
That
and also, if we kill him, we end the punishment. He's being punished now.
It's absolutely criminal. We've got to keep listening. Well, we haven't got to, obviously. But it's on the news, it's on the radio, it's talked about. This man is reveling in it. You've had a lady, that little Keith Bennett, who's gone to a grave not knowing where the little lad is.
Yep.
Absolutely. It's disgusting. This government and previous governments and governments then in the 60s, they ought to be ashamed of themselves.
Andy, I'm going to interrupt.
It should have been shot. It should have been hung years ago.
Andy, I'm going to interrupt there just because I think you've made your point and I hope you feel you've made your point. I just want to get to some other callers if we can. 08 453 00 9956. And Andy may have a point. I'm 40. I was 40 a couple of weeks ago. Hooray. I wasn't around during the Moors murders. And he was 20, he was 21 when it happened. I don't know what the atmosphere was like. I don't know what the feeling amongst the nation was at the time. I've read about it. I know it's a famous historical murder that's in some ways, and I don't mean this bit to be flippant, has turned into a legend. I wasn't there at the time. Does that make a difference? Doris is in Addington. Morning, Doris.
Hello. A slightly different attitude. Yes, I do remember it. But, of course, it wasn't in this area. You know. But really, what I'm trying to do now is tell you what happened to my father.
Go on.
He actually decided he wanted to go. And this happened on Armistice Day, 1966.
Go where?
Up to pass away so he wasn't in the care home.
He wanted to commit suicide?
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Now, for the previous week before he died, he didn't have any drink at all. I'm told this is what I was told by the care home.
Right.
And the previous week before the drink, he didn't have any food.
Okay.
So it was his choice, but on the other hand, that was 1966. And, you know, it's like Ian Brady's choice. I think it'd be best if he did do it, rather than us keep him in prison.
So, sorry, what are you suggesting, Doris, that Brady should be allowed to take his own life if he wants?
Yeah.
Is that not him getting off lightly, though?
No. It would be the end. In fact, it probably should have been done before as well. You know.
Doris, listen up. We have to move on because I have to go to the travel.
All right, that's okay.
I really appreciate you sharing your story about your dad. Thank you very much. Ta-ta. There we go. It's Doris in Erdington telling us a rather powerful story about her dad. What do you think should happen? Would we be better off if Moore's murderer, Ian Brady, was allowed to kill himself? You can give me a call, 08453 009956. Morning, this is Ian Lee, filling in for Nick Conrad on BBC WM 95.6. Did you hear my brain freeze ever so slightly there? Because I was asking for water at the same time as trying to say five. So I nearly said water. That's how much of an idiot I am. I cannot do two separate things at the same time. Lots going on this morning. We'll get back to overrated bands. But the thing that's really got you phoning in at the moment is the question about Ian Brady. Would we be better off if Moore's murderer, Ian Brady, was allowed to kill himself? It is amazing. For crimes that took... and for those of you who don't know, there were a couple of references in those last calls I should probably pick up on. Someone mentioned that the murders being filmed and recorded. They weren't filmed as far as I'm aware, but the audio was recorded. And that was one of the things that made these murders even more horrific. If child murders could be, you know, anything more than horrific, was the fact that the audio was recorded. That was what was being mentioned there. And it's amazing, isn't it, that so many years later, 50 years later, Ian Brady is still on the front page of some of the newspapers. This is because Revelations, it's kind of been out in the public domain before, but the re-revelations, if such a thing can exist, from letters that were exchanged between Ian Brady and our earlier guest, Brendan Pittaway, a journalist, where Brady claims he killed four more people. Well, we're asking this morning, would Moore's murderer, Ian Brady, would we be better off if he was allowed to kill himself? Ranjit's in Albury. Morning, Ranjit.
Morning, hey, how are you doing?
Yeah, right? I'm fine, thank you very much. Ranjit, can I ask a personal question?
Yep.
How old are you?
I'm 47.
Okay, so you weren't around when the murders were happening. I'm just wondering if there is a difference of people's opinions depending on if they were alive when the murders took place or not.
There probably isn't a difference, but the older people are more passionate than the younger people. People your age, my age, I don't think they're as passionate as the old folks used to be.
What do you think? Would we be better off if Brady was allowed to kill himself?
Well, you know, I'm of the opinion that every person's got a use, yeah? So there is a use for Ian Brady. We could do test drugs on him instead of, you know, on the poor animals, you know, animal testing, yeah? You could test drugs on him, experiment on him, do whatever you want, and he can give you answers of what pain he's feeling, and an animal wouldn't, you know, necessarily tell you. So if he dies during one of the experiments, job done.
What? Ranjit, what things would you test on him?
Anything. Anything that we test on the animals. You know, his tolerance to pain, for a start, or cancer drugs.
Why would we test Ian Brady's tolerance to pain? That's torture, surely.
Well, he tortured the people that he killed, didn't he? He's tortured that lady, Keith Bennett's mum, for all of
Willie
her
Johnson,
life.
Yeah.
Yeah, he tortured...
But we live... But Ranjit, we do live, I think, in a pretty civilised, pretty decent country. We can't just torture prisoners.
We do live in a peaceful world and civilised world, yeah?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the small minority of the people, yeah?
Yeah.
I feel really passionate, like your previous caller, you know, about this, that, you know, even though we are a civilised country, something's going to be done, right?
But testing...
people committing the crimes.
Well, it's going to be done, but you're changing it slightly now. You're saying that this would act as a deterrent for other people.
They should have the choice, yeah?
We can't, Ranjit. However heinous his crimes were, and they were awful, I'm not in any way diminishing those crimes, we can't torture him.
OK, maybe not torture him, but still experiment, you know, cancer drugs on him, any kind of drugs on him. you know, to make the world a better place. See, in his while he's been alive, he's made the world slightly worse.
Yes,
of
course he has.
And then for the rest of his life, we can try to rectify that,
By testing painful drugs on him?
Not necessarily painful drugs, then. Or maybe I should change that. That's just the passion inside me. You know, test for drugs on blood pressure, cancer, kidney failure, whatever. You know, whatever they do on the animals,
Okay.
An animal hasn't... I mean, I'm not an animal liberation person.
No.
But what I'm saying is, these things have to be done.
Let's test it on someone who possibly deserves it. Ranja, I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. Indeed. Well, it's an unusual opinion. Maybe you agree with Ranjit. 08 453 00 9956. You can text as well, 81333. Start your text WM. We're joined now by John Ainley, who is the solicitor who represented Winnie Johnson, who, of course, was Keith Bennett's mother. She died of cancer in August of last year at the age of 78, never knowing where her son's body was buried. John, I can't even begin to imagine the turmoil and the anguish that Mrs. Johnson went through. Can you try and describe how awful it was for her not knowing where her son was buried?
Well, it was a dreadful situation, Ian, for many, many years. I mean, she lived with this. She had other children, grandchildren, so she had to carry on with a normal family life. But in the background all the time, there was the distress that she'd never been able to find Keith, and periodically further information came to light that would mean that the inquiry was continued, and that would give her quite a lot of interest and hope that that there was some positive information and that Keith would be found. But very sadly, that piece of information never came to light during her lifetime.
And Keith Bennett, of course, is one of the enduring images of the Moores murder, and it's that famous picture I'm looking at now, you know, a lovely little lad, with you know, gap teeth, glasses, a bit of a haircut, you know. I can't even begin to... What was Winnie like as a person?
Well, she was a wonderful lady, battling lady. She never gave up. She never stopped the quest to find Keith. She helped many other mothers who'd been in a similar situation, whose children been married, so she did a lot of background work with them. She was feisty. I mean, you knew where you stood with Winnie. She called a spade a spade. But, you know, she had a heart of gold, and she never gave up the fight. It was just so very sad that Ian Brady did not volunteer that information during his lifetime, which would have, you know, enabled Keith to be found, and then he could have had a proper family burial, which was always her wish.
And every time Brady... See, I do find it amazing, 50 years later, he's still on the front pages. Every time that Brady kind of popped up in the newspapers, as he does periodically, what was Winnie's reaction?
Well, I think it was one of anger to some extent, and she was, I think, felt that the spotlight was always on Ian Brady. That's what he wanted. He wanted to be centre stage. He wanted the notoriety. And he never showed any remorse during his lifetime. He never said any words of consolation, regret to members of the family, and withheld, you know, vital information which would have possibly enabled the family to find Keith.
Even now, he's still being very flippant about the murders. I'm looking at one of the letters that were sent in the 80s where he calls the spontaneous murders or happenings. I believe in court this week he called them something like petty little crimes or things like that.
Yeah.
That flippancy and that arrogance must have grated with Mrs. Johnson.
It certainly did, and with members of the family. As I say, he wanted this notoriety, but there seemed to be no regret. He was talking about sort of existential sort of activities and recreational activities in the actual murders, which just actually beggars belief if you heard the sort of the hearing. You were at the hearing or saw the briefings from that. It's very hard to forgive somebody ever, not that they would, but in this situation, he never showed any remorse, one word of regret, and, you know, that was very upsetting for Winnie and still is for the rest of the family.
Would we be better off if Ian Brady was allowed to kill himself, do you think?
Well, Winnie took the view that he never gave the children that he murdered any choice whether they should live or die, and that consequently he should not be given that choice either. She felt that he should remain in a high-security hospital for the rest of his life, not be returned to prison. I think his intention was to try to return to prison in Scotland, and there he would have the right legally to go on a hunger strike and end his life, and she felt that that was not his choice, that he should end his days in a normal way and not be in control of his own destiny in that respect.
I do have a slight pang of conscience, John, and I wonder if you can help. Am I part of the problem? And by that I mean by discussing Ian Brady for an hour on a BBC radio station, and am I helping perpetuate his celebrity, the myth of the Moors murders? Should we just turn our back on him and ignore him?
Well, it's a hard call, that, Ian. In some respects, certainly Winnie wanted to keep the story alive so that some information could emerge that would identify Keith's whereabouts. In one sense, it does give him the spotlight, but I think it's a matter of public concern and people want to know about these issues. The tribunal had to be held. He had a legal right to apply for the order, the mental health order, where he's sectioned to be released, and it's normal for there to be a lot of public interest in this. It does give some notoriety. Every time the matter starts to go back in the background, some new information emerges, perhaps from him, that puts him back in the spotlight, and perhaps that gives him some sort of, some notoriety in prison, and that's what he's been looking for. But no, I think it is a matter of public concern. It's quite correct to discuss it, I think.
Thank you. Just John Ainley is the solicitor who represented Winnie Johnson, of course, Keith Bennett's mother. And it is that iconic image, isn't it of Keith Bennett, a little lad, and you look at him now, that was murdered and his body was never found. I'm glad, Johnson, because I do have a slight pang of conscience. I mean, Ian Brady's on the front page of the Mirror. The reason he's on the front page of the Mirror? Because it will sell more newspapers. That's why, let's be completely honest, he's on the front page of the Mirror. And he's been on the front page of a few other papers this week because it will sell more papers. It's a commercial decision to make money out of that. And we like reading about it, don't we? We have this morbid fascination with Ian Brady and with the Moors murders in particular. And, I'm glad, Johnson, because I did feel a little bit guilty that perhaps, as we've said in the show, Brady would have loved last week, and he would love the fact that BBC local radio stations across the country are having phone-ins dedicated to him. So we've done that. Well, okay, well, that's that. If you want to have a little glimpse at the letters, you can do. It's the Daily Telegraph, page 15, and it really is quite incredible. Right, plenty more coming up in the next hour. You can give us a call, 08453 009956. And I'm still taking your calls and your texts on the most overrated bands of all time. The Rolling Stones, UB40. Here's another one, U2. What a load of old tosh.
BBC WM
95.6.
Teachers, if you don't like it, get out of it.
Pensioners who can't do anything to boost her income.
Abduction? As far as I'm aware, she actually went willingly.
Ian Lee, Saturdays.
9 till 12. BBC WM
95.6.
Morning, this is Ian Lee, filling in for Nick Comrade, who's had the cheek to fall in love and get married and dedicate his life to someone else. He's away for a few weeks, God bless him, and I hope he's having a fantastic time. I'm here for the next few weeks. Don't panic, it's not permanent. I think we can get on, can't we? There's only a few arguments in the first hour. Still taking your calls on Ian Brady this morning, if you want to give us a call. Would we all be better off if we let Ian Brady kill himself? Of course, he was declared mentally unstable enough to stay in the mental hospital this week. He wasn't allowed to move to a prison in Scotland where he would have been able to starve himself to death. Would we all be better off if Ian Brady killed himself? Cost us about £250,000 a year to keep him in prison. Also in this hour, we're talking, should all residential areas have a 20-mile-per-hour speed limit? It's being introduced in some places. Well, wouldn't it make the road safer? You can give me a call, 08453 009956.
Call 08453
009956. Ian Lee on BBC WM
95.6.
Stop everything, the coffee's arrived. Can we have a 5-minute break? Is that how it works here? We get 5 minutes off to slurp on a coffee? I'm being told no.
You can give us a call. We're still taking your calls about Ian Brady. We're kind of quantum leaping all over the place in terms of topic today, and there's no way of doing it without sounding vaguely insensitive. So apologies in advance. We're going from Ian Brady to 20 mile per hour speed limits to overrated bands. Let's do an overrated band, shall we? Just to lighten it ever so slightly. The reason I'm doing this, the Rolling Stones are playing at Glastonbury tonight. They're rubbish. They are rubbish. At best, Keith Richards is an adequate guitarist. Well, Gary has tweeted at BBC WN, the most overrated band are the Beatles. Fact. That's fighting talk where I come from. Is that just because I dissed UB40? Is that why you're doing that? No, I won't have that in the slightest. Oh, I'll tell you another overrated act. And this is rubbish. This guy is rubbish, okay? And I love 60s music. I adore 60s music. But this guy is awful. Jimi Hendrix? What's that about? Oh, Jimmy! Oh, look, I can play guitar with my teeth and do a wee-wee on it. Oh, yeah, fantastic. Why don't you just play us a song? But play it properly and play us a song, Hendrix. You can give us a call on that as well if you want something a little bit lighter. 08453 00956. But on the subject of Ian Brady, would we be better off if we let him go off and kill himself? We've got Lawrence in Droitwich. Morning, Lawrence.
Hello.
A lot of very impassioned arguments this morning. What's your take on it?
Well, I think he should have been put down from day one. They had a bit of a vote in one of the national papers about 5 or 6 months ago now, I'm bringing back corporal and capital punishment. And I think something not about 94% of the population that voted in the paper wanted corporal and capital punishment brought back again.
But you can't bring that back simply because of a vote in the newspaper, can you?
No, but what you should do when you get something like that, you should have a referendum. And if you have a referendum in the country, you see, the thing is, a person can go out and kill now, and his family have lost their child or their whatever they've lost, and he's living on forever. And the thing is, I think the only people that really do want to keep the thing open are the judicial system, because if you there's a thing called pentothal, I think, is a truth drug. They say, of course, you can't be guaranteed the truth. If a man puts his hand on the Bible and says, I believe by Almighty God, there's all the truth, I hold to the truth, that's accepted in court. But if you put pentothal, the truth drug, in their arm, they're going to tell the truth.
Yeah, well, the description of it being a truth drug, I think, is slightly misleading. It's not quite that, and there are ways to defeat. Next you'll be saying, Lawrence, we should all do a Jeremy Kyle and just wire them up to lie detectors. None of these things are completely trustworthy. And the reason we can't bring back the death penalty is because we've executed innocent people in the past.
That's right.
But we can't, as a state, be responsible for killing innocent people.
No, but you see, they've killed innocent people, and we're not reciprocating. What are we going to do? We're going to say, no, if you take a truth drug and you tell the truth.
There's no such thing as a truth drug.
Pentothal, yes.
No, it isn't. It isn't a truth drug. It doesn't work like that.
Why?
Well, I don't know the chemical formula for pentothal, but I know that it doesn't work. It doesn't work like that. And the point I was making, and maybe you missed it, Lawrence, is that in the past, this country has executed people who had not committed
the crimes. And
that's acceptable, is it?
No, you see, the thing is, there wasn't such a thing as pentothal. And everybody's objecting to pentothal because the moment you introduce something like that, the only people that will lose out are your judiciary, your flipping lawyers and barristers earning thousands and thousands of pounds a year defending people when you just put a drug in. I mean, 2 minutes. We keep people in jail costing us a fortune, costing the general taxpayer fortunes and fortunes for no reason at all. You bring something new out, and you don't accept it.
Okay, well Lawrence, I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. Do we have any chemists listening to this show? I don't know if BBC WM has a huge chemist listenership. I don't know the chemical breakdown of pentothal. I think calling it a truth drug is a slight oversimplification, isn't it? A powerful anaesthetic, and I think it's used in the state. I think it's used to execute people as well. I don't quite know. So if there are, you never know. When you say these things on the air, you're surprised at who does call in. If there is anybody who knows a little bit more about pentothal than I do, then do give me a call. 08 453 00 9956. Malcolm's in Bourneville. Morning, Malcolm.
Morning.
What do you reckon?
Well, first of all, there's no coffee break for you.
Oh, well, if you talk long enough, Malcolm, I can have a little slurp now.
Oh, well, you just might go on, haven't
done
you?
It. I've done it. Thank you very much, sir. You can carry on there. Well done.
There you go.
You can come
Listen,
on again.
I think Brady ought to be got rid of now, but the reason why he's been kept alive a lot longer at the time was because Winnie Johnson was hoping he would tell her where the grave of her lad is.
Yeah.
You see, well now Winnie Johnson's up there with him now, then surely they can get together and talk, where it is. And what they need to do is get their relatives to get to a good medium and then maybe they could find out then. You know, they could both come through and tell their relatives where he is buried. If you see what I'm talking about.
I do see what you're talking about. They go to someone like that Sally woman who's been in the newspapers this week.
Oh, yeah. And Psychic say, Sally. Yeah,
and say this
like
is... That premise would only work, Malcolm, if we were able to talk to dead people.
Yeah, well, they can, can't they? I mean, they can. I talk to my relatives a lot here.
And do you hear them talking?
Because I know they're always around me.
Oh, listen, my dad died earlier this year, and I'm constantly talking to him. I don't necessarily hear any answers. It's more of a...
But you can tell when they're around you, when you can feel it all. If you're sitting somewhere or anywhere and you feel your head tingling or your hair, as if somebody's touching your hair, that is your relatives around you.
Is it?
Talking to you. Or listening, standing with you.
And would they be able to... I can't believe I'm following this train of thought. Would they be able to... That tingling, could that be turned into a map reference?
A map reference?
Well, to identify...
I don't know about that. No, I'm just saying that they're around you. So if you went to a good medium, like, you know, an accomplished medium that everybody knows, they would be able to talk to whoever's with you and probably find out things.
Well,
That's how they get to know the secrets of what only you know.
One of the...
You see?
Yeah, I do see. One, coming from a slightly different point of view, people might argue the fact that Winnie Johnson and Keith Bennett, I don't mean to sound flippant, but because their spirits haven't communicated that information, that could possibly mean that we can't communicate.
Their relatives have got to go to a medium to find out. You see, they've got to attend a medium or ring up one and get them to attend, and then they will find out that way the spirits... then we'll be with them.
Yep.
And that's how they get to find out. It's up to the relatives to go to see a medium.
Okay, Malcolm, listen. Malcolm, thank you very much indeed. Well, it does just go to show that when you do a phone-in show, you never quite know what you're going to get. That was Malcolm from Bourneville, who suggests that the family of Keith... I'm not even going to repeat it, to be honest. You heard it. 08453 00 9956. We'll carry on talking about Ian Brady for the rest of the morning, if you so desire. What do you think should happen? And I'm not going to do the phone in, should we bring back the death penalty? Because, you know, then next week we'll be doing, should we legalise cannabis? And after that, it'll be toys and sweets from the 70s. We're not going down that route at all. But the reason you can't bring back the death penalty is because we've executed innocent people. And we can't be part of a state that would do that. That's the problem, you see. But what do you think should happen to Ian Brady? Give us a call, 08453 00 9956. And after the travel with Liz, we're going to speak to Terry, who's got an overrated band. Please don't let it be one of my favourites. Morning, this is Ian Lee on BBC WM 95.6. I know you've tuned in. Where's Nick Comrade? He's off, he's getting married. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but he's now spoken for. He is off the market. So I'm filling in for the next few weeks, and so far I think it's gone all right. There's only been a few major arguments and few disagreements, and I've only slagged off UB43 times, so can't be that bad, can it? The reason I've mentioned the UB of the 40 is we're talking about overrated bands to add a little bit of light to what's going to be quite a heavy show, I warn you now. The Rolling Stones are playing at Glastonbury tonight, and there's a huge fuss about it. I've never got the Stones, and I've tried. I've really, really tried. I've made the effort. I've listened to the records. I've listened to the albums. I don't get it. Three good songs. Angie, You Can't Always Get What You Want, and Wild Horses. That's it. So I'm asking this morning, what are your overrated bands or acts where people just rave about them? And you're left scratching your head going, what? Gary's tweeted in the Beatles. I'm not having that. I'm overruling that. Because if you don't love the Beatles, you have no soul. There's no reason for existing. The Beatles cover everything. Terry's in Perry Bar. Morning, Terry.
Morning.
Terry, what overrated bands are there?
Oh, you're going to hate this.
Go on.
I could never get Elvis Presley. He was rubbish. His whole career was based on bigotry and racism.
I missed that bit, Terry. Where was the bigotry and racism in Elvis's career?
Because he ripped off the black music in America, and yep. Of course the racism within the radio stations, they refused to play, and he heard it, thought, oh yeah, that's good, I like that.
I will give you that. He watered down and kind of made black music a little bit safer for white ears. That's I think, is definite. But I don't think, that doesn't qualify Elvis as a racist, though, does it?
Well,
perhaps the music industry at the time could be considered to be slightly racist.
Yeah, but he's totally devoid of any soul. There's no soul in his voice whatsoever.
I never liked 50s Elvis. 60s Elvis was a joke. I do have a soft spot, Terry, for fat 70s Elvis. The white jumpsuits and the Las Vegas. I quite like that.
Oh, I've got a soft spot for Elvis, a bog in the middle of Ireland.
Oh, Terry, naughty Terry. Hey, Terry,
sorry.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Have you been to see this Behind the Candelabra, the Liberace film?
I've got it on DVD. It's brilliant. We've downloaded it illegally. It is superb.
Terry, right, first of all, we cannot here at BBC WM 95.6, we cannot condone the illegal downloading of movies. And I'm sure Terry was just making a playful, flippant joke. I'm sure you paid to go and see it in the cinema. Let's move on, Terry, before we both get in trouble. Is it any good?
Yeah, and I mean, because of the homophobia within the film industry, Michael Douglas should get an Oscar. His performance is stunning.
I'm looking... Terry, listen, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to seeing that. It's the first film in a long time I've been excited about. Behind the Candelabra, the Liberace story. It looks brilliant! And doesn't Douglas look fantastic as Liberace? Well, Terry, they're obviously supporter of people's rights against homophobia and racism, but he is for the illegal downloading of films. And just to stress, of course, I'm sure it was a playful comment that he didn't meet, and we could not condone such naughty behaviour here at BBC Three Counties Radio. 08453 009956 is the phone number. You can send me a text as well, 81333. Start your text WM. This is Ian Lee on BBC WM, filling in for Nick Conrad. Now, here's a question for you. Should all residential areas have a 20-mile-per-hour speed limit? Now, as someone, and I will say this freely, I'm ashamed of it, as someone who recently had to go on a speed awareness course, and then a week after the speed awareness course got flashed again, yeah, I know, I am now very, very light of foot in the car. I kind of think this is a good idea. A 20-mile-per-hour speed restriction is to be trialled on residential streets in Willenhall as part of a new pilot project to improve safety and to cut accidents. It could then be rolled out across Walsall to resolve the issues of roads having different limits around the borough. The trial of the 20 is plenty... Who came up with that? We may be speaking to the gentleman who came up with that in a second. 20 is plenty approach in residential streets has been agreed as part of the coalition agreement at Walsall Council between the Liberal Democrats and the Conservatives. Well, we can speak to Council Leader Mike Bird, who joins me now. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Ian.
Did you come up with the 20 is plenty slogan?
No.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. I've seen it elsewhere in the country. It's a national campaign, of course,
yep.
And mainly you'll see this by schools. But certainly it gets the message across.
Now, this 20 miles per hour, is this legally enforced or is this the suggested speed?
It's a suggested speed, and basically, obviously, if it works, then like all traffic orders, you can put them in temporarily, and after 6 months they become permanent. So if it does work, then of course we will consider making it a permanent traffic regulation.
So just to clarify, because it's too early on a Saturday morning for me, and I'm a bit of an idiot. So if the 20 miles per hour is a suggested limit, but you could still drive at 30 miles per hour and not be fined, is that correct?
That's correct. It's an awareness more than anything,
right.
And an awareness of speed.
Then the question is, if it's just a suggestion, what's the point of it?
Well, again, it's to raise the profile of, in residential areas, there are more hazards than there would be on a motorway, for instance. You've got children playing, you've got mothers who many a time aren't concentrating what they're doing. They've got children in pushchairs and buggies.
Damn,
and
those mothers.
So it really is an awareness of when you're in a residential area, your driving skills are called upon for different reasons, and therefore perhaps lower speed would give you more concentrated effort on what's around you.
Listen, to a certain extent, Mike, I agree. I have driven in various residential areas, and you do see idiots driving at ridiculous speeds. And the thing outside schools, I just think that's a complete no-no. Of course you should drive a bit more responsibly. But do we have any evidence that driving at 20 as opposed to 30 actually saves lives?
Yes, especially if there's an accident at that speed. You're more likely to survive at 20 miles an hour than you would at 30 or 40 miles an hour. I mean, my own ward, we've got one particular road where the local fraternity, the youngsters, the boy racers, are coming up at 60 and 70 miles an hour. And I'm not exaggerating. Well, Mike, I don't believe in speed humps, and I think this is an alternative.
OK, Mike, stay there, because we're joined on the line now by Ian Taylor from the Alliance of British Drivers. Ian, are you in favour of the 20 is plenty?
No, we're not. I have, in fact, met some of the 20 is plenty people, and they paint an idyllic, shall we say, picture of a road where people are wandering around, cycling around, and all the traffic is going dead slow. It's a bit of a pipe dream. It's just not like that. Now, from the driver's point of view, 20 on most roads is a pretty unnaturally slow speed. We all know there are a few little roads, residential ones, very narrow ones, where that is the natural speed of the road, and the vast majority of drivers probably, without being told to, do somewhere around about 20 on those roads anyway, without the need of spending money or putting in new rules and regulations. But for most roads, it is just too slow. 20 is not plenty.
Ian, if the 20 is a suggested speed, but you can still drive legally at 30, is it a pointless exercise?
Well, to some extent, in some ways, I'm actually quite relieved to hear that, because I think there is a place for advisory limits. You very often see them on bends and things, not the normal speed limit signs, but they say maximum whatever. That's not an entirely bad idea. However, this is unusual. Most 20 schemes that come in up and down the country are not advisory. They're compulsory, but without the enforcement there to back them up, which does make them a bit pointless. It costs a lot of money, which I suggest is largely wasted money. There's so many other things which would be more effective councils could spend their money on.
Well, let's put this to Mike. Mike, how much is it costing?
This scheme is costing nothing. It is, as you said, it is a trial. And I tend to agree with the gentleman that I don't believe that we should have legislation and traffic regulation orders to compulsory have 20 miles an hour. I see this as an awareness programme.
So I know you... Sorry to interrupt, Mike.
...drive many thousands of miles, and like the gentleman there, there are advisory limits, and but there is always somebody,
Mike,
who just doesn't care, and especially, you know, through residential areas where there are schools and there are more dangers than there are on the main road.
So are no signs or anything going up there, Mike?
Yeah, there will be.
It will cost something,
won't
it?
The cost is minimal. If you were to say you're probably looking at about £5,000, you know, that would be my estimate, and it is an estimate
Ian,
of what would be required.
Ian Taylor from the Alliance of British Drivers, £5,000, if it helps save lives, that's money well spent, surely.
Well, compared with a lot of schemes, I have to agree that is quite cheap, because an awful lot of councils are spending hundreds of thousands. However, is it going to save lives? We have examined a lot of statistics that have come out of the Department for Transport, and it is proving, slowly but surely, as the figures come out, not to be the case. Where blanket 20-mile-an-hour zones have been introduced, traffic has to some extent gone down, because drivers, if they can, avoid the 20 zone, and yet the accidents do not fall. They sometimes, in fact, in many cases, go up, whereas they continue to fall, like the national average, on those roads that are still 30 or 40 miles an hour.
Mike, accidents could go up. Have you checked into the stats on this?
No, I haven't. But, you know, if there are accidents that go up, then conversely, one has to say the survival rate is probably better. I see this as an alternative to road humps, which I hate. And you see people who are road surfing, if you like. They go over the hump and slow down, then they put the foot down and get a bit of speed up, go over another hump. And these are not popular, and those do cost hundreds of thousands of pounds. I'm all for better ways of slowing traffic down where necessary and when necessary, without putting these obstructions in the road and, you know, chicanes and things like that, because, quite honestly, I think those are more dangerous.
This is better, isn't it, Ian, than
well,
road humps and chicanes?
The councillor and I do at least agree on that, yes.
Good.
However, one of the reasons why I think those accidents don't necessarily come down is what I call the complacency factor. Vulnerable road users are told it's safer, they feel safer, they get complacent and they take less care. And if you look for long enough at any 20 mile an hour big zone, I think you will find pedestrians, cyclists and others actually going into the road without looking, concentrating on their texts or their music clamped to their head. They just don't take enough notice and look out for themselves. I think it's not a very good road safety policy, which revolves around, shall we say, the best speed to hit somebody at.
Ian, what would you suggest that local councillors do, or what would you suggest that Mike does to make residential roads safer?
Well, are they that unsafe, for starters? There's several things they can do, actually. I'll very briefly do a couple, maybe three, which is, one, you can engineer safer roads. Once again, I don't mean speed humps. I don't mean traffic obstruction. I mean things that get traffic freely flowing at a reasonable speed for the road. That's one. The other thing is education. I've already mentioned people not taking enough care, and not just drivers. Drivers have to take care or they're in trouble. There's a certain responsibility on everyone else too. So education, training on road safety for all road users, and that means everyone,
Ian,
starting at school.
You mentioned responsibility for drivers. Let's be honest, 80% of drivers are idiots, aren't they?
No.
Oh, they are.
You will always get idiots somewhere in any activity, any walk of life. But no, the vast majority of drivers are perfectly good, responsible people, although sometimes they make the odd mistake.
Okay, Ian, listen, we're gonna end it there. Ian Taylor from the Alliance of British Drivers was the last voice you heard there, who's against the 20-mile-per-hour limits in residential areas. And before that, we heard Council Leader Mike Bird, who's for it, who thinks the 20 is plenty campaign is going to be a winner and it's going to save lives. Although we don't actually know how many lives are lost anyway, so I'm not quite sure how you'd compare the figures. Well, what do you think? Your turn now, dear listener. Do you think all residential areas should have a 20-mile-per-hour speed limit? 08453 009956. You can give us a call. You do see idiots. And I do stand by the thing that I think most drivers are idiots. I've been doing a lot of driving on motorways recently, and here's an experiment. No one drives at the speed limit on a motorway. Stick to the speed limit on a motorway and see how much, or a little bit below it. Or if you drive at 65 miles per hour on a motorway, you see how much abuse and how many flashing lights you get. People don't like it. You'll be overtaken by everybody. But should all residential areas have a 20-mile-per-hour speed limit? 08453 009956. Matt's in Solihull. Morning, Matt.
Hello there. How are you doing? Welcome to this programme.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Humps should be done away with completely.
Yes.
They're just a complete nuisance.
You don't like
There's
humps?
Humps outside my place in Solihull here, and they just drive mad over. The modern vehicle is well-sprung, so they don't bother at all about it. The humps should be done away with completely.
Yes.
And the speed limit should be risen to 40 instead of going down to 20, for the simple fact the modern day vehicle is impossible to keep it down to 30 or 20.
Sorry?
It's impossible.
It's impossible for you to keep your vehicle at 30 miles an hour.
Yes,
then you shouldn't
a
have a driving licence.
And it's impossible to keep it down. You're looking in your mirror to see whether there's a police car behind you. If you were allowed to go over 30, between 30 and 40,
Outside schools and
things? I think it would be an awful lot safer on the roads because the driver wouldn't keep looking in his mirror all the while to see whether somebody was. Because
those
it's
annoying
quite
mirrors.
Impossible. People will tell you that people with new Mercedes and stuff like that, it's impossible to keep them down.
So are you suggesting that to make residential areas safer, outside schools and past houses,
well,
we should
outside
drive...
outside schools, yes.
We should drive at 40
outside
miles an hour.
Outside schools, but then we have the people parking around the schools and it's... just, you know, it's terrible.
Matt, can I make it, Matt, can I make a suggestion to you? If you're unable to drive your vehicle safely at 30 miles per hour, you shouldn't be allowed to have a driving licence.
Well, that's right. And there's not a lot of really reasonable drivers on the road. Very few drivers they'll give a weight to you. I mean, I come onto a crossing, there's a woman with a couple of kids trying to get across, it's raining. They won't, they knock her down and I pull up and flash them coming the opposite way so they will stop and see what's let the woman across. But no, they just drive like lunatics.
I think you're, don't be rude, I think you're one of the ones driving like a lunatic in your 4x4 at 40 miles an hour.
No, I don't. I've been driving 60 years.
You should take a break.
Heavy goods man, a haulage contractor. I was a haulage man away back in the 50s. And when my vehicle stopped, I had a lot of spanners thrown on the dashboard, and I know exactly which spanner to get.
Yes.
I'm an authority. And another thing, I think if people knew more about the mechanics of the car and how the thing works...
Oh, it's all done by a computer now. It's all powered by a computer, Matt.
Yes.
Listen, finally, you're old enough, as I am, to remember what...
You weren't. I'm older. I could be your great-grandfather, I think.
I'm being polite. But we're old enough to remember what roads, those speed bumps, used to be called. Do you remember?
Yeah, but the whole thing is due care and attention.
That's not what I was aiming at. But
followed today.
No, it's not. They used to be called sleeping policemen. Remember that? Used to be sleeping policemen. Now there's speed bumps. What's all that about? There's Matt there who thinks that, no, we shouldn't reduce the speed limits in residential areas from 30 down to 20. We should increase it to 40 because it's so difficult to drive at 30 miles per hour in his 4x4. I would suggest if Matt can't drive at 30 miles per hour in his 4x4, he should either be given a smaller vehicle or have his driving licence removed. It's really easy to drive at 30 miles an hour. I don't quite understand... Wow, I don't quite understand that argument. Maybe you do. 08453 009956 is the telephone number. You can send me a text as well. 81333. Start your text WM. Taking your calls on that. And this morning we have as well been talking about Ian Brady because he's on the front page of the Mirror and he's in the Telegraph as well. I've killed four more and I buried Keith Bennett in Yorkshire. Well, should we? Would we all be better off if we allowed Ian Brady to go and kill himself? Doreen's in Erdington. Morning, Doreen.
Morning. Nice to hear you.
It's nice to hear you too, Doreen.
Ian Brady.
Yes.
Well, when it happened, he should have been on to start with, and it'd have been the finish. But now, because he wants to do this himself, we've kept him this long, so let's keep him a bit longer. If he's suffering, let him suffer. If it had been 20 years ago, I'd have said yes. But now we've kept him this long, and he wants to end his life to suit himself. Well, we're not doing that.
It costs...
I don't care how... It's cost this much all these years. We've put up with it this year. How many years has he got to live?
Well, it could be another... It could be another... He's, what is it, 74?
If they're going to do it, should have let him done it 20 years ago. Not now. Not now he's suffering, getting older, and he don't want to put up with the suffering. Let him suffer. But really, what they should have got rid of him in the first place.
Well, they didn't, so
we
have to live with what we've got. And I think he's about 75, so he could have another 10, 15...
He might only live another 12 months.
He might have another 10, 15 years, Doreen.
I don't agree with him. Whatever he wants
£300,000
to do, we do the opposite.
£300,000 a year.
I couldn't care less. It's suiting him. I don't want him anything to suit him. Whatever he wants to do, I want to do the opposite. Do you understand what I mean?
I do understand. I totally get your point. If he's suffering now, we shouldn't in any way aid him.
He wants to end his life to suit himself.
Doreen, listen, can I go off on a slight tangent? And please, anyone listening, don't think I'm being insensitive. It's just this, by the very nature of this kind of show, when you're doing such diverse topics, you sometimes have to make what appear to be vaguely insensitive quantum leaps. But Doreen, you sound of an age, if I may be so bold as to say something like that.
Yeah, I'm getting on a bit.
You said that, and I was thinking it, but I didn't say it, and that's the important thing.
No worries.
Did you ever like the Rolling Stones?
No, and I'll tell you this. I could tolerate the Beatles, but they never did that much for me.
I liked
Lonnie Donegan and the Skiffle. That suited me. I liked a bit more, you know, swing with it.
Does your chewing gum?
Can I just say a bit about the roads?
Yeah, why not? Why not, Dory?
I don't drive.
I'll nip off.
Never have. But I think the driver's on the road today and got a minute to live. Now, I was crossing a road, and it's, you know, pip, pip, pip crossing. You've got to wait.
Yeah.
Now, they've got plenty of time to know that they've got to pull up.
Yes.
And this was only this week. This driver, there's two lanes, and he comes over the white line at least nearly 2 foot. And he's got to wait, because you don't know which side they're going to change to. It could be going across the other way.
Yes.
But he's revving his engine, revving. Can't wait to get away.
Oh, he's eager.
He's got a minute to live to me.
Yes.
You know, that's what causes accidents. I've been crossing a pedestrian crossing, the lights have changed, and where it's a double lane, and fortunately I've had the presence of mind to look left, and the car's come straight across the crossing.
You should cross quicker then, Doreen.
You should
jog across.
A kite or some roller skates.
Yeah, exactly. You should get you on a skateboard, Doreen. You'll be across in
right.
No worries. Doreen, listen, lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much. Covered all the topics of Doreen. She's good, isn't she? Hey, here's something that I only learned, I learned a couple of years ago, and I love this. You know some, you probably haven't spotted this, and now I'm mentioning it, you will spot them, you will not be able to not notice these. At some of those Pelican crossings, you know the little yellow box where you press the button, and it's like, some of them underneath have got a black cone, a little black cone. Now, keep an eye out for these. Who knows what the black cone is for? Anyone? Anyone? No, no one here does. I'll tell you what the black cone is for. If you touch the black cone, okay, you can spin it with your fingers. If you touch the black cone, when it's safe to cross, the black cone spins around. And it's for deaf and partially sighted people. So if you can't hear the beep and you can't see the light saying that it's safe to cross, the cone spins round. And that means that it is safe to cross. You've learnt something, you see. You've learnt something. So don't, you know. This is Ian Lee filling in for Nick Conrad, who's had the temerity to go and get married. We've learned something about crossings today, haven't we? 08453-009956 is the phone number. Carol's in Chelmsley Wood. Morning, Carol.
Hello. You was talking about Keith Bennett.
Yes, we were. We Ian Brady's in the papers again, and yes, Keith Bennett, of course, has come into the conversation, one of his victims, yes.
Yeah, well, at the moment I'm reading a book by a young medium, and his name is Ross Bartlett.
All right.
And in the book, this is what made me phone up, actually.
Yeah.
In the book, he was talking to Keith Bennett.
All right.
And Keith told him what it actually had happened to him.
Yeah.
All the details. And he also said something about... would you want me to read the part out to you?
A couple of lines, yes.
Yeah, well,
it doesn't go into graphic detail, does it?
No,
okay,
no.
Just give us a couple of lines.
Well, he was on about what had happened to him, and he also said that Maura Hindley and Ian Brady had got a gun.
Yes.
And as he was finishing off telling them what had happened to him, how it had happened, he was supposed to be on his way to his grand's house, and they picked him up, you know, on the street.
Yes.
As he was going away, sort of fading away, he turned around and says, there's more. So anyway, this medium, the person who'd gone to see the medium, had another reading with them, and they got Keith back through again, and Keith said there was more that had been murdered by these two people.
Right.
Who were buried up on Saddleworth Moor. And he also stated where his remains were, and it's at a place called Adam's Cross.
Right, and has Mr. Bartlett, this psychic, passed this information on to the police, do you think?
He's passed it. It's all been... The family member
yep.
from the Bennett family
yep.
They passed it on to the police, but apparently at the moment nothing's been done about it.
Right, right. I'm looking at a picture of Ross Bartlett at the moment.
Yeah.
He's very young for a psychic, isn't he?
Yeah, he's absolutely amazing.
He's 21 years old.
Yeah, and he's been seeing spirits since he was 4 years old.
Apparently, and his homepage on his website describes him as Ross Bartlett, Earth Angel, and there's a picture of him sat in a field, topless, with a big pair of angel's wings tattooed on his back, covered in tattoos.
Yeah.
Do you think, and I don't want to cast any aspersions on Mr. Bartlett, I'm sure he believes in what he's doing, but do you think that maybe he's how can I put this politely, imagining this stuff, or possibly he's writing this stuff?
No, because the things in the book that he's talked about, other people have actually turned around and said how true it was.
Right, right.
He's a young man. He didn't want this.
No.
But this has happened to him.
He wouldn't want the attention and the books to be sold, would he?
No. No. No, he's an absolutely amazing young man.
Have you been to one of Mr. Bartlett's shows?
No, I didn't even know he existed. I was in Smith's and I saw this book and I thought, I like the look of that, so I bought it. And I've just only started reading it a few days ago.
His accolades on his website, youngest ever professional medium, youngest professional medium to appear on the radio.
Yeah.
Youngest professional medium to appear in a national... Lots of those.
Yeah.
Youngest professional medium to publish a book.
Yeah.
Highest average reviewed book in religion and spirituality section in the Amazon Kindle store. Yeah. That's a great one.
If I was you, I mean, before you knock it, if I was you, go and see him. Or have him on the programme.
They certainly were. I have put out a challenge at various other radio stations that I've worked up and down the country, Carol. I have put out the challenge that if any psychic or medium can convince me of their powers to communicate with members of my family that have passed away, then I will happily embrace them and salute them and shout their names from the highest building. But no one's been able to do it.
No, but you're doing it the wrong way.
What's the right way?
Just ask if you can have a reading with them. You don't challenge them. Just ask if you can have a reading and see what... No wonder they're saying, oh, no, you know, he's trying to pick faults and all that sort of thing. Just ask if you can have a reading.
I wonder how much Ross Bartlett charges for a reading.
I don't know, but you'd have to contact him and find out.
Do you know what I'm going to do, Carol?
Have a reading and see what happens.
I'm going to contact him and I'm going to find out.
Yeah.
I will have a little look into that. Carol, thank you very much indeed. I do sound slightly... We've had several callers this morning who have been indicating their belief in the afterlife and the ability to communicate with people on the other side. I wish it were true. Oh, I wish it were true. Moving away from Mr. Bartlett specifically, I really wish. Wouldn't it be great if you could go to someone, you could sit down and you could say, I need to talk to my nana today. My dad passed away this year and I miss him terribly. Wouldn't it be good to be like, I want to talk to dad today, just have a little chat with him. Wouldn't that be nice? Or my granddad. Wouldn't that be good? It's not true. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. I'm sure these people that do it believe they're doing it. Not in any way suggesting they are charlatans or anything like that. But it doesn't work, does it? Or does it? Maybe we can throw that into the mix. Maybe you've had an experience of that. And if you are a psychic that can come on and do a little reading for me, I'd love to. And I will do it with an open mind. I did have it very quickly. I know we've got trouble. I did have a psychic come on a radio show once. Who said, did a reading on air, said, oh, I predict terrible things. This is when I was going out with a girl. I predict terrible things for your relationship. I don't think it's going to last. And we went to a record, and during the record I said, yeah, you're wrong on that, because I'm with a girl and I'm going to ask her to marry me next week. This was about 5 years ago. My wife, who I'm with now, I'm going to ask her to marry me next week. He came back on air and went, yeah, I'm getting there's going to be a very significant change in your relationship. I just told you. Listen, if you're a psychic or you've had a psychic experience, we can throw that into the mix. Why not? 08453 009956. Ditch the Mobot. I mean, I don't mean ditch Mo Farah. I mean, keep him. He's obviously an excellent ambassador for sport. But Mo, you need something more than the Mobot. When he was at Wimbledon this week doing the Mobot with Bruce Forsyth, I thought, no, there is a phrase, isn't there? Jumping the shark. It refers to when a television sitcom or a TV series has gone past its sell-by date after an episode of Happy Days where Fonzie jumped over a shark. The Mobot has jumped the shark, dear listener. I really think it's I think it's seen better days. We need a new physical catchphrase for Mo Farah. This is Ian Lee filling in for Nick Conrad on BBC WM. Don't worry, it's only for a few weeks. It's not a permanent replacement. He's off getting married. I hope he's having a wonderful, wonderful time today. Lots of things we're talking about. 20 miles per hour speed limits in residential areas. Some of you think it's a good idea. Some of you think that, no, it should go up to 40. Don't reduce the speed limit. Increase it, for goodness sakes. We're also asking for your overrated bands. So far, we've got UB40, Jimi Hendrix, The Rolling Stones, The Beatles, someone suggested. Oh, dear. 10cc we've had. I don't think 10cc have ever been that rated, have they? Maybe they have. I don't know. You can give me a call, 08453 009956. We'll be talking about Afghanistan shortly, but also discussing Ian Brady. Millie's in Kingshurst. Morning, Millie. Oh, no, Millie's disappeared. Millie, at the final moment, we'll try and get Millie back. At the final moment, Millie possibly thought, I don't fancy this. No, I can't. I'm also asking, because it turns out that several of you are rather... I'm always surprised by this. Several rational, normal-sounding people called in with quite spiritual tales of mediums and talking to the afterlife. So if you want to... I'm not a believer. I'd love to be. Oh, I would love to be. It would be so comforting to know that we carry on somewhere else and that all of my loved ones who we've lost are existing on another better plane. I don't buy it. If you have evidence to the contrary, do give me a call. 08453 009956. Millie's back. Morning, Millie.
Oh, hello, love. It's only just a thought that struck me. I've thought about this for a long, long time.
Yes.
Someone in my family says they could contact the dead and all sorts. Now, my thoughts are, your loved one, wouldn't they talk directly to you and not through someone else? You see what I'm saying?
I do, but maybe we are not tuned in to the psychic wavelengths that we need to be.
I don't see that, to be honest.
Well, it's like when you know when you get a new TV,
yes,
and you have to tune in the channels, don't
yes
you? So maybe we, those who don't receive the messages, are like a brand new television, and we're not tuned into the correct channels.
This is what the person in my family has said.
Oh.
She said you have to be trained for it.
Yeah.
My thoughts are that you've lost someone very close to you.
Yes.
And I think if this was happening, I believe in an afterlife, yes I do.
Oh.
But I have trouble with the message coming through someone else.
Yes.
I get suspicious about it because I think perhaps they've got something to gain by doing it. Do you see?
Well, I know that some of these mediums, they charge money, don't they?
Yes. This is what strikes me. I don't want to be a pessimist or, you know, poo-poo the idea.
No, don't poo-poo.
But the thought was that you love someone dearly and they die.
Yeah.
They would come through to you, surely.
You would like...
I see what you mean about being on the right wavelength.
Yes. You would like to think so, wouldn't you, Millie? And I do think it's all guff, to be honest, to speak bluntly. But I am approaching it with an open mind. And I say, if anyone has got a psychic story or can prove me wrong, phone up. Tell me something that only I would know. 08453 009956. I said we're flipping and flopping all over the place today, like a pinball being fired around a table. We go from the possibility of psychic mediums to talking about Armed Forces Day in Afghanistan. I know, do bear with me. As you probably are aware, hundreds of events are taking place across the UK today to mark the 5th Armed Forces Day. It was introduced 5 years ago as a day for the nation to show its support and appreciation. Well, meanwhile, the most senior British soldier in Afghanistan, General Nick Carter, has said the West should have held talks with the Taliban in 2002 after they were overthrown from power. You know, there are plans to have talks with the Taliban now, and I think the latest ones fell through. There was a disagreement. But if we should have talked to them 11, 12 years ago, have the last 12 years all been for nothing? What was the point of the war in Afghanistan? Well, we can speak to former International Development Secretary Claire Short, who, of course, famously resigned from the Labour government over the Iraq war. Good morning, Claire. What do you think about what General Nick Carter has said, that we should have been in talks with the Taliban 11 years ago?
I think he's saying something very important. And there's another famous former ambassador that said something very similar. I think the original invasion was reasonable because there were camps training Al-Qaeda people, you know, on the ground and open. But if you remember, the invasion of the Taliban melted away. There was no fighting.
They all disappeared, didn't they? They ran to the hills.
Yes, and then there was a big UN conference in Bonn and a big consultation about what kind of arrangements, and the UN took over. And then it was much later, the deployment to Helmand. And if you remember, I think, was that 2006? And John Reid was then the Secretary of State for Defence, and he said, we hope to come back without a shot being fired. And I think it's 400-and-odd British service personnel have lost their lives, almost all in Helmand. Now, my own view is that the original action to stop the camps was right, but the deployment in Helmand was just a mistake. And we should have built on the Bonn process. And not, it didn't have to be us. You know, the whole international community could have talked with all the different groups that were in Afghanistan and brought them into the political process.
But why, Claire, why didn't it happen then? I remember this idea kind of being mooted at the time, and there was outrage that we would even dare talk to the Taliban. Why should we talk to them? Was that the reason it didn't happen?
But, I mean, who's the Taliban? Because, you know, it's just a word, isn't it? And, of course, Afghanistan is a very big country with different ethnic groups. So we just say anyone who opposes the sort of American, supported by Britain, intervention is the Taliban. I mean, that's very crude.
Mm.
And most people object to their country being invaded and dominated by foreign people with weapons. You'll get a lot of different kinds of people saying, I oppose that. And, of course, the Pashtun people, which are on the same side of the country as Pakistan, are very proud tribal people who don't let anyone push them around. So, and the Taliban aren't Al-Qaeda. They're not organising internationally to, you know, attack other countries.
You're right, and I think that's the confusion that some people have, that they think that they mix up the two groups or the two political thoughts and think they're the same people.
Well, I think also decent people think, well, there must be someone who knows what they're doing. We wouldn't sacrifice all this money and life and kill a lot of people in Afghanistan for nothing. But I'm afraid that there are some people, when they get a taste for war, they kind of go for it. And it's other people's lives, other people's children. You know, as Michael Moore famously said, if you look at all those American politicians who are gung-ho for war, their children aren't in the army.
When we eventually,
more Americans that are in the army.
Claire, when we eventually do withdraw from Afghanistan, will we have achieved anything?
Well, you know, as everyone says, the schools and some roads have been built and so on. Good. But, of course, when the Soviet Union used to come to the border of Afghanistan, and then there was a Soviet-supported government, and, of course, the Soviet Union was in favour of girls' education, we then supported a policy that used religion to, you know, and encourage these fanatical groups to overthrow the Soviet-supported government. So we were part of a policy that actually led to the schools closing down, and now we've helped to reopen them. So I think we've made some horrendous errors. But now I think it's good that we're withdrawing, and we mustn't turn our back on the people of Afghanistan. We've got to stick with them. And one of the things, they've got an enormous army that they couldn't pay for themselves, so there's going to have to be money going in to keep that going.
But if we stayed,
we couldn't have done any good. It's just aggravating things and making more and more Afghans angry, so they join the opposition, and it's endless war.
To boil it down into very simplistic terms, and it's hard to do this, because I still don't quite know what we are hoping to achieve, but have we won?
No. Well, of course, what is victory?
Well, yes, exactly. It's not so clear-cut in this instance.
That's one of the problems. What was the objective? I mean, the first objective was close down the Al-Qaeda training camps. I personally supported that objective. That was achieved within 6 months of the initial action. After that, I think it should be handover, build, you know, get the international community, let the UN lead, all support, build their institutions, and gradually come out and hand over. And you know, help with, because there was 1 in 4 children under the age of 5 lose their life. I mean, it is a very poor country, and the war the West had before that had caused some of the poverty. But you remember then Tony Blair said, it's about stopping drugs being run.
Yeah,
Yes, I do remember that line coming out at some point, yes, yes.
And actually, there's been no reduction. Because the way you stop people growing drugs is to give them a legitimate, better life, not just burning their fields. Because if they won't grow onions, if that doesn't give them enough money... So I think the objective of the war became completely unclear, and we just got caught up in... And then, of course, once you've sacrificed life, you think we can't pull out, otherwise those lives have been sacrificed in vain, and then you're trapped in a kind of unending war, and I think that's what happened.
Claire Short, listen, thank you very much. It's the former International Development Secretary, Claire Short. And it's odd, isn't it? Have we won? I don't know. World War II, it was obvious what the objective was. It was to defeat the Nazis and international fascism. That was obvious. Afghanistan, I don't know, was it to get rid of the Taliban training camps? Was it to stop and burn all the poppy fields? I don't know. And what do you think? I mean, we've lost hundreds of our troops over in Afghanistan. For General Nick Carter, the most senior British soldier in Afghanistan, to come out and say that the West should have held talks with the Taliban 11 years ago, is that a little bit insensitive? Does that not imply that all of those lives that we've lost were possibly lost in vain? And for that to come out, I'm sure it's no coincidence, by the way, that it has come out on Armed Forces Day. Well, what do you think? Should we have talked to the Taliban 11 years ago? Would that have been more sensible? Should we be talking to them now? 08453 009956. The thing I've discovered this morning by talking to you is you're all very passionate. You've all got very, very strong opinions, so I'm sure you'll have an opinion on this. What do you think? Should we have talked to the Taliban 11 years ago? Isn't that always a better option? Was it more George or less war? Isn't that always the better option to discuss these things with our enemies as opposed to getting our boys and girls killed? 08453 009956. This is Ian Lee filling in for Nick Conrad on BBC WM 95.6.
BBC WM
95.6.
Teachers, if you don't like it, get out of it.
Pensioners who can't do anything to boost her income.
Abduction? As far as I'm aware, she actually went willingly.
Ian Lee, Saturdays.
9 till 12. BBC WM
95.6.
Well, it must be official. There's a jingle with my name in. That's all proper. Morning, this is Ian Lee, filling in for Nick Conrad. Don't worry, it's only for a few weeks. He's off getting married, so I'm sure he's having a fantastic day. It'll go by in an instant, though, Nick. Cling on to every second, because it flies by. But I'm here for the next few weeks, filling in for him at BBC WM 95.6. And one of the joys of doing a show like this on a Saturday morning is there's lots of room for it to breathe. There's lots of room to have a chat. So if you want to give us a call about any of the things we're talking about this morning, well, you've got another hour to do it before Tammy at 12. So these are what we've got out there so far at the moment. We're talking about speed limits. There's a call to reduce the speed limits in residential areas to 20 miles per hour. What do you think? Is that a good idea? You can text 81333, start your text WM. We're also, bizarrely, we've got onto psychics and mediums. I don't quite know how we did it, but we have. I'm not a believer. I'd love to be a believer, but I'm not. If you can convince me otherwise, give me a call. We're also talking about Afghanistan. Should we have talked to the Taliban 11 years ago? And Ian Brady, his request to be moved to a normal prison has been rejected. Would we all be better off if we let Ian Brady kill himself? Coming up, we'll be talking about fracking as well. It's not what you think. Steady, no. If you want to give me a call, 08453 009956.
Call 08453
009956. Ian Lee on BBC WM
95.6.
You can text in your overrated bands and musical acts as well. The Rolling Stones are playing at Glastonbury tonight, and the whole world heaves a huge sigh of, huh? Really? I just think they're such a tedious, overrated band. They've made a 50-year career out of three good songs and a half a dozen okay songs. They're sub-Herman's Hermits. What overrated bands have you got out there? You can give us a call or you can text me, 81333, start your text WM. But on the subject of Ian Brady, we've got Lynn in Rubry. Morning, Lynn.
Good morning, Ian.
Good morning, Lynn.
Oh,
wonderful to actually speak to. I loved you when you were on LBC.
don't mention another radio station.
Oh, well, I can. I must. I no, used to what? Lie in bed and roll with laughter. What? It was wonderful.
I don't know
anyway.
If that's a compliment or not, imagining Lynn lying in bed listening to me.
I used to go to bed with Ian Lee.
There we go. Well, let's not spread that rumour too much. Lynn, what have you called in about today?
I've called in about Ian Brady.
Yeah.
I've heard much talk about torture.
Yes.
Drug trials.
These are all calls from earlier on in the show, yes.
From earlier on in the show, yes. What I don't understand is why people that are asking for such draconian action to be taken against him don't understand that the man is mentally ill. I lived through the Moores murders trials. I'm 66 or I'm a 67.
What?
I'm one of the two.
Yes, you're old.
Yeah. Oh yes, I'm really, really old.
Yeah.
But that's why I shouldn't forget that.
Yes.
That's why I think, why can't people understand that this man is ill? Capital punishment, that can't work. Because for capital punishment to work, someone has got to carry out the deed. That makes them guilty, the same as Brady, of taking another life.
In some ways, Lynn, people listening to this might think that you feel sorry for him or you're defending him.
Oh, my God, no. Absolutely
but
not.
It sounds like you're taking away his responsibility from what he did because he's ill.
Yes, he doesn't have responsibility because he's ill. It's because of his illness that he doesn't understand. As far as I can see, he doesn't understand the gravity of the crimes that he committed. To him, they were nothing. It was just a bit of fun, but it wasn't a bit of fun, and we all know that. But in his mind, he doesn't know that.
But if okay, let's have this slightly existential conversation. If he is ill enough for those things to not for him not to treat those crimes as crimes, then we shouldn't punish him, should we?
I think he's being punished enough.
But if it's his illness that caused that, if he's unwell, and then he shouldn't be punished at all. We should be kind of looking after him.
I think we are. I think our taxes are the money that. I mean, people are talking. It's been said about. Please forgive me, because I'm such a nervous person.
Oh no! Don't listen. You're sounding confident, here. And I'm just trying to get to the core of what you're saying, because I know that there will be people listening to this who do disagree. And if they want to give me a call, 08-453-00-9956. But you're doing brilliantly, Lynn. Carry on.
Yeah. The core of what I'm trying to say is that this man's actions were not normal. They were the actions of a mentally ill person. And do we, if we had to execute this man for his actions, do we go ahead and then start to execute others who are mentally ill of doing the same? You can't do that. You've got to look after. You've got to put them somewhere.
Why? Why have you got to look after them?
Because it's not their fault. It's not. The fact that he is mentally ill is no. His brain doesn't work properly, the same as someone who has got, say, let's say, cerebral palsy, their legs don't work, or part of that man's brain isn't working right. And we know that it's not working correctly. But to ask for him to. Some of the things I've heard this morning have been so extreme.
Yes, we did have a gentleman who suggested we should test Ian Brady's pain levels and give him cancer drugs. But you're not seriously comparing Ian Brady to someone with cerebral palsy, are you?
Yes, I am, because I've got family who've got cerebral palsy and their limbs don't work properly. They can't control their limbs. They're not a danger to anybody, obviously.
Obviously.
And they are not as badly affected by their disability as is Brady. But Brady cannot control what's going on in his brain. I'm sure you're trying. I'm sure you understand what I'm trying to say.
I do, and I'm trying to help you out a little bit so that we kind of get to the core of it. I kind of do get what you're saying. It's very it's a difficult thing to explain.
Yeah. He's got a disease of the brain.
Right. Yeah.
His actions were something that he couldn't help.
But at what point, Lynn, do we take remove responsibility from someone? What is the threshold where we say, well, okay, well, that person did this and is responsible. This person did it, but he's not well enough, so we won't hold him responsible.
No, he is responsible. He is responsible for what he did because he did it. But in his mind, he is not responsible. It was all a bit of fun. And the fact that that he is now in this hospital is the right place for him to be, where he's no longer a danger to anybody. He can't go out and carry on doing the evil deeds that he did. But my point is that there is disease of the brain. No, it's not, the word isn't disease, is it?
He's
got no control over what goes on in his brain, the same as a person with, say, cerebral palsy hasn't got control over their limbs. I know what I'm trying to say.
Go
it's
on.
Not coming over very well.
I know. Listen, we'll end it there, because I understand the point you're trying to make. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I do understand the point that I'm trying to make. Well, there you go. We should just stop the rest of the show and let the phone calls come in on that, I think. That was Lynn in Rubery, who says Ian Brady shouldn't be punished any more than he is, because he has a degree of responsibility, but she compared him to someone with cerebral palsy. That's what I'm trying to say in a clever way. I can't. Lynn just compared Ian Brady, the Moors murderer, to someone with cerebral palsy. I'm not going to say any more. I'm going to hand that over to you, dear listener. I know there will be lots of you who will want to have... I understand the point she was making. Not saying I agree with it, I understand it, and it's a difficult point to explain. 08453 009956. We just heard Lynn there say that Ian Brady compared him to someone with cerebral palsy, in that they are unable to control their actions. What do you think? Is that a little generous, perhaps? 08453 009956. I'm sure lots of you want to have your say. You can send me a text as well, 81333. Start your text WM on the... yes, thank you so much. I keep forgetting. I'm having so much fun talking to you lots. Johnny Sheldon, I'll come to you in a second. You want to talk about speed limits. Morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6. I'm filling in for Nick Conrad, who's getting married. It's only for the next few weeks, and you've all been so polite to me this morning and made me feel welcome. Most of you, some of you haven't, but I've enjoyed it. I hope you're enjoying it. We're having some pretty good discussions. If you want to give us a call, I'm here until 12 o'clock. The number's 08453 009956. One of the things we've been talking about is the introduction of, well, a voluntary 20 miles per hour speed limit in residential areas. John's in Sheldon. Morning, John.
Good morning.
Do you think it's a good idea?
Yes. Where I live, in Sheldon, just round the corner, we've got the Linden Junior School, Junior Infant School.
Mm.
And very often, they were out the other day, actually, a couple of teachers bring out the pupils with bikes in the yellow turf, tops, etc., learning to cycle and road safety. Now, they go along to the end of Wensley Road, to the junction of Herondale Road. Now, on two occasions recently, I've seen two separate cars come down Herondale Road at speed and take the corner without braking. One almost ended up on the other side of the pavement. The second one, he almost lost control of the car, you know, and I dread to think what had happened if one of those kids had just been coming, approaching that junction, and then one of those idiots come round.
But, John, if you've got idiots, and they are idiots, and I've seen them that drive at 40, 50, 60 miles an hour in a residential area, if you introduce a voluntary 20 miles per hour speed limit, they're not going to pay any attention, are they?
Well, no, but Matt was on about the speed humps. Well, I think they're a good thing, especially in this situation. Regarding Matt, I'm not sure if it was him, Matt, that I observed recently on the A45 on a battery-operated remote control Zimmer frame roaring up the Coventry Road on the A45 towards the Birmingham Bullring, wearing a Hell's Angels studded leather jacket and Dr. Martin's boots with bright yellow shoelaces. God bless him.
John, can I present you with the award for the most obtuse phone caller this morning? Would that be okay?
You certainly can.
May God bless you, sir. Thank you. Not a clue. Not a clue what that was about, but I enjoyed every second of it. Hey, one of my bugbears is those mobility scooters. Not the mobility scooters themselves. They are good. But when you see people driving them on the roads, you get that sometimes, don't you? You get someone on a mobility scooter, and they are great things. My mum used to have one. Until she kept crashing it, and we took it off her. Sometimes they go on the roads, and there'll be a huge line of traffic behind this mobility scooter that's doing 7 miles per hour. Anyway, I enjoyed that phone call, even if I didn't have a clue what he was banging on about. This is Ian Lee, filling in for Nick Conrad on BBC WM 95.6. Fracking! No, I'm not handing in my notice before the show's even ended. It's a proper word. It's an actual term. The energy regulator Ofgem has warned that power shortages could become more likely by the middle of the decade. There was a front page, wasn't there, this week, saying that there are going to be blackouts in the next few years. A report has said that spare capacity could fall between 2 and 5% by 2015 if supplies aren't increased. Well, where are we going to get the extra energy from? The government is looking into whether shale gas could provide our future low-cost energy source. A new study has revealed that the UK may have twice as many reserves as previously thought. And this is where fracking comes into play. Fracking is the process by which shale gas is extracted. It is opposed by environmental groups. I can speak now to Nick Greeley, who's director of the energy consultancy No Hot Air. He's in favour of fracking in the UK. Nick, very briefly, what is fracking and how does it work?
Good morning, Ian.
Good morning.
It's a development to release natural gas from rocks, which previously we were unable to do so. Very, very hard rocks. I mean, this is like getting gas out of slabs of marble, that thickness. But it's 10,000 feet below our feet. And it has been proven in the United States in the last 5 years or so, and it's absolutely transformed
Sounds miraculous if we can squeeze, not blood out of a stone, but we can squeeze gas out of a stone. What is the exact process? What do you have to do to get it out?
Okay. Well, you obviously have to drill the well first. But the process is that water and about 20,000 litres, which is about the same amount of water that you'd find in 2 or 3 swimming pools, is pushed down by hydraulic fracturing equipment, which is a large pressure pumpers. It only lasts about 4 or 5 hours, that part of the process. It's also sand, and it also includes small amounts of chemicals that you'd find under your sink, things like bleach. Or, if anybody wants to visit my website, there's something there that actually, in an experiment in 1991 in Sussex, they used Marmite. It didn't work, though.
Well, I suspect you're not. Well, Nick, stay there, because not everybody is in favour of fracking. We're joined by Chris Crean from Birmingham Friends of the Earth. Chris, Friends of the Earth are against fracking, is that right?
We certainly are at the moment, because I think the thing is that we're hearing all this huge amount of potential reserves that might be there, and we're not actually getting the detail in terms of how much energy, how much water, how much methane is going to be released, how much pollution is going to happen. And I think we're at the very, very early stages in this country of exploring whether or not fracking could be a way in which we could get some fossil fuels into our energy mix. But the most important thing there is that if we're going to use a new form of fossil fuel, then we should be stopping using others, because we cannot increase the amount of fossil fuels that we consume, because consuming fossil fuels leads to dangerous climatic change.
It's been used successfully in the United States, hasn't it, Chris? It's been proven to work.
I think the jury is out on that. There are a number of people who are saying that, yes, shale is working and it's actually driving down
energy costs in the United States of America. There are other people who are saying that it's causing huge amounts of pollution, it's releasing huge amounts of methane, which is a very, very potent climate change gas. And the other thing is that what's going on is that Americans are actually substituting shale for coal, and then they're exporting the coal. So we're not actually leaving fossil fuels in the ground, we're actually consuming more fossil fuels, and therefore we're releasing more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, and that is leading to more climate change emissions.
Nick, sorry to interrupt. Nick Greeley, Chris just mentioned the release of methane into the atmosphere, and I've seen video footage, I don't know how genuine it is, of Americans who are near fracking sites turning on their taps and being able to set fire to what comes out of their taps. Is that a reality?
No, it isn't, and if you visit my website, you can see that I like... excuse me.
There we go. You okay, Nick?
Yep.
Too much fracking, I think, mate, could possibly be the cause there.
Okay. This is a very serious subject. It means that the water thing is a completely non-issue, and again, there are 10 myths there. But it's very interesting...
Let's address the topic. You have a good clear out of your throat. Let's address the topic that Chris was bringing up about pollution. What levels of pollution are there?
Okay. The one study that the FOE mentioned, for example, has also been counteracted by 9 studies that said that it isn't happening. Now, when you're talking about pollution, what the FOE and me can agree on is the impact of coal. And what we need to do is to ban the substitution of U.S. coal, which is coming over to Europe, for that. And certainly when you speak to people in the U.S. administration, we are now looking at perhaps a global coal ban, or at least a ban on the coal trade. And that is great news for the environment.
See, Chris, that would make sense. That kind of goes along with what you're saying. But Nick was also saying there, Chris, that there are more studies that dispute your figures about pollution.
No, I mean, I think what I was referring to is the release of methane. I'm not referring to the stories about people being able to set fire to their water. The issue is that once you start to... and you start to extract the shale gas out of the ground, that will then lead to methane escaping from the well and the well area. And that is a very, very dangerous climate change gas, about 30 times more potent in terms of climate change than carbon dioxide. So what we need to do is we need to actually sit back and actually do the full analysis as to whether or not shale is actually going to be a benefit for us in climate change terms. If we can actually get a coal ban, then that's one stage forward. If we can actually start to become much more energy efficient in the way that we use energy. At the moment, we're incredibly wasteful in the amount of energy that we just throw up into the sky. So we've got to become much more efficient in the way that we use all forms of energy. And then the third thing is that we've got to invest far, far more money and time and effort into developing renewables and bringing renewables up to scale. And that would actually create loads more jobs and loads more commercial activity for people in the United Kingdom and all over the planet than going for more fossil fuels.
Nick, is there any truth to the rumours that fracking could possibly be responsible for several earthquakes that have happened?
Well, there you have to put things in perspective. The earthquakes, which we agree about, were extremely small.
But they did happen.
Again, context is important. Okay, this is not a Japanese earthquake.
No.
The level of those earthquakes, and you can go to any geological site in the world,
yes,
those kind of earthquakes occur 34 times every single minute somewhere on the planet.
But they did happen as a direct result of fracking.
Well, again, these are classified as imperceptible.
Okay.
So if you want to obsess about what you can't even feel...
Well, no.
During
the time that we
have spoken,
I don't think it's obsession.
There have been over 300 of those earthquakes.
Okay, but Nick, I don't think it's obsession. People do have fears about it, and I just want to clarify that fracking has been responsible for very small earthquakes.
Like I say, in the time I have just said that, there have been 5 earthquakes.
I appreciate
that size somewhere in the world.
But yes,
if
or
that
no,
worries you?
Yes.
Then I really think that, you know, perhaps, you know, nothing in this life is risk-free.
Nick, but I just, again, you seem to not be answering the question. I'm not quite sure why. It's a yes or no. Has fracking been responsible for these small common earthquakes.
Yes, there we go. Certainly, and you can see the Royal Academy report putting that in perspective.
So we needed Nick. Thank you very much indeed. That was Nick Greely, director of the energy consultancy No Hot Air. I don't know what I did to offend him, but he didn't seem to enjoy that interview as much as I did. And the other voice you heard there was Chris Crean from Birmingham Friends of the Earth. That was fun, wasn't it? A nice little bit of sport on a Saturday morning. Right, this is Ian Lee, filling in for Nick Conrad on BBC WM 95.6. Here until 12 o'clock, 08453 009956 is the phone number. You can text as well, 81333. Start your text, WM. We've been talking about Ian Brady this morning. He's on the front page of the Mirror. I've killed four more, and I buried Keith Bennett in Yorkshire. If you want a slightly more in-depth look at the story, go to The Telegraph. And it's the revelation that it's kind of been out in the public domain for about 20-odd years or so, that Ian Brady claims he murdered four more people. This was revealed in a series of letters that he exchanged with a reporter who we spoke to in the first hour of the show. Well, we're asking, would we be better off if we let Ian Brady just kill himself? Oh, I nearly gave out my phone number then. You don't want that one. 08453 009956. Carl's in Tamworth. Morning, Carl.
Morning, Ian. You're right.
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. What do you think about Ian Brady?
Well, I've got to respond to what that caller, Lynn, I think her name was.
This was, yes, so let me just refresh those for people who may have just tuned in. Lynn claimed that Brady had a certain amount of responsibility, but she compared him to someone with cerebral palsy who is unable to control their body.
I think that's absolutely disgraceful to compare something like him to some poor person with cerebral palsy. For a start-off, I mean, he's just pure evil. I mean, what he did to those little kids is just unbelievable. I don't even really want to think about it. Me, personally, if it was me, I'd go to work on him and his kind with a blowtorch and a pair of pliers, and I'd enjoy every second of it. She said that if we go around executing
Carl,
like him...
Carl, now be honest. You wouldn't really enjoy going to work on an old man with a blowtorch, would you?
After what he did, yes.
You would get pleasure from that?
I would.
Don't you think that's sad? Don't you think that's quite sad?
Try saying that to the families of the little kids that he killed.
But you're not, as far as I'm aware, you're not one of the families. You would get pleasure from torturing an old man with a blowtorch.
After what he did, little kids that were crying out for their mum and dad.
I know, it's horrific.
When I think about that,
it was horrific.
Listen,
I'm a dad of two boys, and it's horrific to think of anything like that happening to anyone that I love. I couldn't get pleasure from torturing an old man with a blowtorch, though.
Well, I'll tell you something. She said that if we go around executing people like him, then someone has to carry out the act, and that makes us as bad as him. I'd do it for free. No problem. I'd do it as a little... I do it on the side as a little hobby.
Oh, now, Carl.
If they're looking for someone to do it, I'll do it.
Carl, listen, think about what you're saying. It's very easy.
I have thought about it, Ian.
It's very easy with when we talk about Ian Brady and the Moors murders to get very emotional, because it is one of the most horrific crimes. What they did was awful. But, Carl, seriously, you could kill an old man as a hobby.
For what he did.
How does that sound?
I'm not talking about a normal...
No,
normal,
I know you're not, but you could do it for... You would get pleasure out of the act of torturing him and then killing him.
Him and other people like him, all your paedophiles and God knows what. Line them up, let me have a go. I'll get rid of that crime overnight, trust me. I would. I'll stand by what I say. And I know... I mean, that woman, Lynn, she's 66 years old, and what she was saying was just unbelievable. The way she was sticking up for him. What was she, the world's first do-gooder or something? I mean, you know, 66 years old and she's got that kind of attitude. I expect it from these younger people.
What would you want to do to Lynn in your regime, Carl?
I think people like her who stick up for them, they should be locked up.
She said he's got
brain disease. I think she's got the brain disease.
Okay, Carl, we're good. We'll end it there. We can't get too personal about other callers, but I do think that... I don't know what I think. People who claim they'd get pleasure out of... Listen, I know it's Ian Brady, I know what he did. People who claim they get pleasure out of attacking him with a blowtorch and then killing him, that's... I think that says something about Carl, doesn't it? Or am I being overly naive? 08453 009956, give us a call. Overrated bands. Polly's in Lichfield. Go on, Polly.
Hello, Ian.
Hello, Polly.
I haven't heard you before.
So
where have you come from?
I've just popped out out of the ether. I know Nick. I don't know him personally, but I've heard him. He does an excellent job.
He does.
As a fill-in for Nick, as a substitute teacher, how am I doing?
You're doing great.
Lovely, that's
because I absolutely agree with you about these bands and the Rolling Stones.
They're rubbish, aren't they?
Oh, God, I could play the drums in any of those bands. You only have to bang, bang, bang. And I'd like you...
Yes.
...to have a word with Goldberg.
Yes, Adrian Goldberg, yes.
Adrian Goldberg.
I'll have words with him. What do you want me to say to him?
I told him what rubbish he chooses for his music.
Oh. What kind of nonsense does Goldberg play on his show?
Oh, the sort that you're talking about.
Oh, dear.
These honest, they haven't got a clue.
Right, hang on a second. I have the ability to email him directly. I'm going to do it now. Hang on a second. Polly, you're in Lichfield, are you?
Yes.
Right, dear Adrian.
I have told...
Polly, hang on, I'm just writing the name. In Lichfield says, stop playing rubbish music. Is that about right?
That's about right,
All
yes. Thank you.
Ian Lee. He's going to get that. And boy, oh boy, if he doesn't act on it, there'll be trouble.
I just want to say, you see, I was brought up with the big band era.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was good music, and all the musicians knew how to play.
Yeah.
And so it really spoils you.
Where is that Glenn Miller? Hey, where did he go?
Oh, God. Well, there is a few. I mean, Michael Bublé, he always has that kind of band, doesn't he?
Everyone's got a soft spot for Bublé, haven't they?
Yeah, but, the band is always musicians who know what they're doing, not this bang-bang stuff.
Yes. But Polly, listen, well, Adrian Goldberg now has that email. If he continues to play that bang-bang stuff, I'm back next week at 9 o'clock. Would you give me a call and let me know?
I definitely will. I listen to him every day.
Yes.
I love him because I've told him he's got the dirtiest laugh on the radio.
Well, there's a story behind that, but for legal reasons, I'm not allowed to go into it. Polly in Lichfield, thank you very much indeed. Adrian Goldberg, an excellent listen, by the way. But yes, if he carries on playing that bang-bang music, if he doesn't respond to this email, then I'll send a letter. That'll certainly buck his ideas up. This is Ian Lee filling in for Nick, who's getting married. 08453 009 56. 25 minutes left of the show if you want to give us a call. Male grooming, not that. It's, you know, plucking your hairs and things like that. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Yes, we'll do that in a little bit. Before that, though, why do some people have affairs? Well, Helen Croydon is author of controversial tell-all book, The Sugar Daddy Diaries. She's gone undercover to ascertain exactly why men stray from long-term relationships and to lift the lid on how to prevent it. Helen joins me now. Morning, Helen.
Morning.
Nice to talk to you.
You too.
So tell me about this book, The Sugar Daddy Diaries. What was the idea behind it?
It's a bit of a confessional memoir, but then it turned into a sort of a journalistic investigation as well. I joined a website, a Sugar Daddy website.
Yes.
And it was completely innocent, bit of fun.
Oh,
always
right.
Had a thing for older men. I was single. I didn't want a long-term serious relationship. I think I wanted a bit of glamour in my life. So one day I put into Google younger women, older men, and that popped the sugar daddy sites, and I thought, I think, that sounds what I'm looking for.
A little bit of fun. As a single lady, you're allowed to indulge.
Yes, and it is a slightly controversial website, but, you know, I wasn't looking for something serious and long-term, and I was looking for a bit of glamour, I think, you know, sophisticated high flyer.
So these weren't just
martini.
These weren't just old men you were looking for, or older men. These were rich older men you were after.
Well, I mean, that goes with the territory.
Yes.
I mean, that wasn't my criteria in my head when I had a fantasy for meeting an older man. My penchant for that wasn't the wealth. I mean, it goes hand in hand.
Yes.
I think money's often a symptom of success, but it's the success that's attractive.
Right. Okay.
So I went on this site thinking I'd just be on there for a few months and then I'll go back to, you know, finding someone serious. And I just became kind of fascinated in this world because I think finally I was meeting men who I was actually attracted to, you know, older, wiser, more sophisticated. And secondly, this was the sort of relationship model that I wanted, which was the kind of, you know, a couple of times a month. You still have some genuine attraction, the genuine rapport, but there's no demands to meet all your friends and family. And that's kind of exactly what I was looking for. So I kind of became quite addicted to this site. And then over a period of a couple of years, I started to realize there was a bit of a darker side to the site, and that a lot of the men offer women gifts and allowances and things like that. Now, at first, I was shocked used to delete all these messages that said, you know, can I help with rent and all sorts of euphemisms.
They were offering to help with rent?
Some do, yes. I mean, not everyone on that site is you know, has a sort of a monetary aspect to the relationship, but there was definitely a side.
What sort of gifts were you being offered?
Well, originally, you see, it's... They say in their messages kind of euphemisms such as, you know, I can take you out for you know, looking to meet someone for 2 to 3 times a month, can help with bills, etc., is the sort of euphemism that they'd offer.
And that is prostitution, isn't it? That's what's springing into my mind.
That's what I thought at first.
Yes.
You know, this is very much what my book's about, is that I deleted those messages and thought, oh my goodness, no way, you know, I'm a career girl, I can't do that. But then over time, as I met these men, because I was a little bit intrigued, I actually realised that, you know what, in some ways, if you're not looking for the one and you're not looking to have a committed relationship, in a way, what these men are saying is, you know, I don't have the emotional and investment to sort of see you every day, but so to compensate for that, I'm going to support you in some way. And in a way, that's a more honest way of having a non-committal relationship. More honest, for instance, than a girl who I knew very well, who was really into a guy. He pretended he was into her. Typical story. He got his wicked way, disappeared off into the sunset. You know, she was left feeling quite degraded, feeling quite down. And I remember her telling me the story, and this was a big turning point in my viewpoint. You know, she said to me, well, it's all right for you going off on these fancy dates and getting to nice restaurants, etc. She said, do you know how dirty I felt doing the walk of shame home? She said, you know, what have I got to show for it? And it sort of made me think then, in a way, these men who are looking for what I call a low-maintenance relationship, in a way, it's actually quite an honest way of admitting that you're not looking for commitment.
So did you then start taking these offers of gifts and help with the rent?
Well, after a very long time, it didn't, I want to emphasise, you know, it didn't happen easily and it didn't happen overnight. Over time, I went from being horrified and deleting these messages to, step by step, a couple of things made me think, actually, maybe that's not so bad if I'm dating these men anyway. Now, one of those turning points was that friend who I've just described.
Yep.
And then another turning point was I was dating this guy, and we had a great, fantastic, fun relationship. He was in London every couple of weeks, and he stayed in a hotel. He wasn't married. He was divorced. And I knew he saw other people, but that didn't bother me because that wasn't what I was looking for. But I found out, through various means, that he was paying some of the other girls who he was seeing.
And you felt jealous.
You know, it made me feel like a bit of a mug in a way, because I thought, well, here's me, I'm quite happy with this non-committal bit of fun, temporary fun,
yeah.
And he's paying some girls for doing what I was doing for free. So over time, I started to think, actually, if no one's manipulating anyone's heart here.
Yes,
one's pretending that this isn't what it is. So, you know, step by step, I did start to accept gifts at first. And then eventually, there were a couple of times where I accepted a monthly allowance. But you know, I've been doing it for a very long time.
Helen,
and I did feel very uneasy.
Well, if you've been doing it for a very long time, you should get paid for it. But hey, so what was your monthly allowance with this gentleman, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I don't mention that in the book, and I never have. But, you know, suffice to say, I was working at the time as a producer, TV producer, and I was a bit bored in my job, and my career was going nowhere, and I think part of it was fueled by frustration. And it was enough to have as a bonus. And as the guy said, that, you know, the guy that I was dating, what he said was, you know, if he had a friend and he wanted that friend to come on holiday with him or do these things with him, and that friend didn't have the money to do so, he said he'd pay for that friend, and this was no different.
But would he be having sex with that friend? That's the thing, isn't it? That's the difference.
I did meet these men in a dating context, of course, and that's kind of what I was looking for at the time. I mean, I've grown out of that phase now, but at the time I was going through a bit of a sexual exploration phase myself, so, and that's kind of what I was looking for too.
Did you discuss this with your friends? Did any of them bring up the P word and say, "Look, Helen, you're being a prostitute here"?
Well, that comparison doesn't escape me nor the people on the site, and of course I thought that, and that's why you know, that's why I used to delete those messages at the beginning, and that's why I was so, you know, felt so uneasy about it. But it didn't feel like that because these were men that I liked, that I was dating anyway,
yeah.
You know, and I met in on a dating site, and who, as I said before, you know, they were looking for some way to sort of assuage their guilt that they couldn't offer commitment. So, the difference, I think, with prostitution is the main motivation is money. Mm. You know, you meet someone and it's a hard, fast exchange of cash for sex. You know, my motivation wasn't the money. My motivation was fun, and the money was kind of a bonus or gifts. You know, the money only came in a couple of times. So,
and Helen, very funny, because we are running out of time. This is fascinating. But the book, The Sugar Daddy Diaries, of course, you can rush out and buy immediately after this show. Were several of these men married?
There were married men on the site. I never met any married
right.
men because I didn't want to do that. You know, I did want to have some sort of genuine rapport and continuity with a man. I didn't want to be someone's other woman. But certainly there are married men on there.
Helen, listen, it's lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you.
There's Helen Croydon, who's author of the book, The Sugar Daddy Diaries. It's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, we've only got 15 minutes. If you want to have a say on this, you can do, of course. 08453 009956. It is an interesting one. Sounds to me, I don't want to bandy the P word around. At what point does it stop being supportive and become prostitution? 08453 009956. Right, it's coming up to it's a quarter to 12 virtually already. Where's the morning gone? Morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6. I'm filling in for Nick Comrade. If you've just tuned in, don't panic. It's all good. There's nothing wrong. He's off getting married. So good for him. And I'm sitting in for him for the next few weeks. It's always, as a fan of radio, when one of my favourite radio presenters is not in and there is a substitute teacher filling in for him, there's a part of me that goes, oh dear. And I was worried how I'd be treated this morning. Most of you have been lovely. Most of you have. I mean, those that stayed listening, I'm sure some of you switched off, at which point that's no problem. But most of you have been good. It's been fun this morning. I've certainly enjoyed it. One of the things we've been talking about is Ian Brady. We had a caller earlier on who... I got the point that Lynn was trying to make. She struggled to make it. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understood the point she was saying, that he has a mental condition in the same way that people who suffer from cerebral palsy do. And to a certain extent, they are not responsible for what they do. That was kind of what she was trying to say. Some of you took great offence at that. Carl called in and was furious with that and said how he would take great pleasure setting about Ian Brady with a blowtorch. Well, I don't know about that. 08453 009956. Marie's in Cosley. Good morning, Marie.
Good morning.
Good morning. What have you called in about?
Well, firstly, to say I'm missing Nick, but I've really enjoyed your show.
You're very kind. Fabulous. He'll be back in a few weeks, and you're very kind to say that. Thank you.
No, but it's been a fabulous show. The woman that phoned in earlier about the cerebral palsy thing.
That was Lynn,
like
yes.
Like you said, I sort of get what she was saying. I think it came across in the wrong way, because I've worked with a lot of people with cerebral palsy, and it's not a mental illness. It's like living life with your hands tied behind your back.
I think the point, and again, it is a hard point to explain, the point she was trying to make is that because of the condition, whether it be mental or physical or whatever, they are not responsible for the shakes or the tremors or the involuntary movements they might make. And I think she was comparing
but
that...
But that's not killing children. It's a completely different thing.
You are right. Involuntary tremors are not killing children. In what capacity, Marie, have you dealt with people with cerebral palsy?
I've worked with people with cerebral palsy, and they're normal people. It's like
of course
they are. It's like living life with your hands tied behind your back. But
how old were the people with CP you were working with?
Oh, anything from 14 to 50.
And how does it affect their lives?
Well, like I said, they're normal people, but they're just restricted. There's nothing wrong with them mentally.
No.
Whereas Ian Brady, I don't know. That's a different kettle of fish for me. I've changed my. I was born in the '50s, so I remember the crimes, and I've changed my mind variously over the years. And I think he's mad.
Well,
and I think the only way to deal with somebody like that is to keep them incarcerated. Marie, for me personally, yeah. I would like to do something physically to him, but I'm a hypocrite. I know I couldn't do it myself.
Well, this is the thing. It's all very easy to say, as Carl said, oh, I'd take a blowtorch to him and I'd love it, or I'd give him a good kicking.
Yeah, I think that, but I couldn't do it.
Exactly, that's the thing. You think it, but, Marie, you sound like a sensible person, and you couldn't
do it.
I couldn't
do it myself.
You could not take a blowtorch to a 75-year-old man. You couldn't give him a kicking, because you are, you're thinking, your brain works correctly. You haven't got it in you to do that.
It's just normal humanity. I would like something nasty to happen to him, but if I had to do it,
yeah.
I know I couldn't.
Marie, I can hear voices in the background. Who's that in the background?
Oh, it's the children next door.
Oh, I thought it might be your kids or your grandkids or something running around. Well, it sounds like they're having a... What's the weather like out there today? Is it any good?
It's mild. Mild but cloudy.
Hey, nice summer, huh? This summer's been fantastic, hasn't it?
Well, I think so. People say we've had no summer, but I've had some fantastic days.
Well, Marie,
I'm really enjoying your show.
Thank you very much, Marie. If she's having fantastic weather, I'm going to Cosley straight after the show, because there ain't been no good weather where I've been at all. It's been can you believe it's virtually July? And the sun has been... Where? I think on Tuesday morning there was 20 minutes of it. Did you enjoy that? That was your summer, kids. Yeah, that was the summer. Well done. 08-453-00-9956 is the telephone number. This is Ian Lee filling in for Nick Conrad. Here until 12 o'clock, then Tammy's taking over. You can text in as well, 81333. Start your text, WM. Or you can tweet us, at BBCWM. I'm trying to go off Twitter a little bit. I'm a little bit addicted to Twitter, so I've deactivated my account for a while. It's a little bit Moorish, Twitter, and I'm just trying to stay away from it a little bit, just get a little bit of distance and just... There's a load of fruitcakes on Twitter is basically what I'm trying to say. It's a strange place out there. In a few minutes, we may be going to our summer tour. We're going to go there now? We ready to go there now? Fantastic. We'll go there then, shall I? I'll shut up. It's the penultimate day of the summer tour. All week, BBC WM 95.6 has been in Tamworth. And the station's very own Caroline Martin is down at the bus in Ventura Park this morning. Morning, Caroline. What's going on today?
Good morning, Ian. You're bombing out down here. We're just in the bus outside Marks and Spencer's in Tamworth. The sun is out. It's a bit windy, but all in all, it is a nice day.
You say the sun is out. Is it going to stay out? Because this is we're nearly in July and the weather's been flipping awful recently.
Let's be optimistic, Ian, all right? It's out and we're keeping it, all right?
It's going to stay there.
We're having it. It's there. The bus is going to be here until about 3 o'clock this afternoon. And as you said, it's the penultimate day. And I'm going to be doing the last broadcast from the bus tomorrow morning between 10 and midday here in Tamworth in Halford Street. And, of course, the legendary Ed Doolan is going to be joining me with that as well for the last hour. So if you're free tomorrow, we've got a bit of a party thing going on between 10 and midday. Party continues after the broadcast has finished until 2 o'clock, but we are going to be broadcasting the show live, so please do come along, join in. We're in Tamworth, it's my hometown, and we're loving it.
And what can people look forward to tomorrow then, Caroline? Have you got anything planned, or is it top secret?
Do you know what? They've not told me. these things. I'm told it's going to be great. It's billed as being the sensation of the week, but I'd be lying if I said I know. I don't. It's going to be great, though. Trust me.
You're there today until 3, and people can come down and say hello, can they?
Yeah, the bus is going to be here until 3. I'm not, because I've got to get back, because my husband is on the radio after Tammy. Adam, he's there from 2 o'clock, so we're just swapping our children over. And so I'm here for another few minutes. But tomorrow we're going to be there, and it's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it, of course. I would, because I live here.
How old are your kids, Caroline, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, there's 5 of them, love.
What?
There's five?
Yeah,
I've got 5. There's 5. Have you worked out? I've got the 5-year-old with me today.
Have you worked out what does it now? Can you stop?
Yeah, since I had her, I've kind of figured out it all works, and
right.
I'm thinking, oh,
leave
that's
it alone.
How.
How old's the oldest? You got the youngest is 5. How old's the oldest?
He's 19. He's 19. Yeah. So.
Oh well, that's nice. And does he help with the younger?
They
kids?
Keep us busy.
Does he?
A little bit.
Yeah, reluctantly.
He winds them up.
Yes.
He winds them up.
Caroline, listen, it's lovely to talk to you. Thanks very much. Good luck tomorrow.
Thank you very much, and really enjoying your show. Everybody is down here, so yeah, come down tomorrow, see us, all right, and have a good afternoon.
Thanks a lot, you're very kind. It's Caroline Martin there. For 5 kids, give it a... I've got 2... It does astound me. I've got 2 boys. That's enough. That's more than enough. What a handful. especially as my eldest. I'll say this very briefly. My eldest, who is 3 and a half, for some reason, when he goes to the toilet, he likes to take all of his clothes off. Don't worry. He likes to strip off. I don't know why. And we have a toilet by the front door. And a few weeks ago, on a Sunday morning, 8 o'clock Sunday morning, he said, "Dad, I'm going to go for a wee-wee." Okay, fine. He took off all his clothes, went to the toilet. And sometimes he gets shut in the toilet. The handle's a bit stiff. And I just heard this voice going, "Well, can you come and get me?" Okay, fine, right. So I'll go and get him. And I went into the bathroom. He wasn't there. He's going, "Where are you?" "Dad, come and get me." I said, "Where are you?"
"I'm outside."
He'd gone out. He'd opened the front door. He'd gone out completely naked at 8:30 on a Sunday morning and was doing a wee in the bushes. And I've caught him trying to do it again. You have to keep an eye on him. If he goes off for a wee, he tries the front door. "Stop right there, sunshine. Into the toilet. Otherwise, the TV gets turned off." Hey, that's just a thing for a different day. We've had a very busy show. Lots of your phone calls this morning, and I appreciate that. It makes it easy for me. I like it when the phone calls come in. We've been talking about Ian Brady. A caller earlier on, Lynn, compared Ian Brady to someone with cerebral palsy. There's no way around it in that they were both not quite responsible for some of their action. Ellen in Walsall has called in. Morning, Ellen.
Hi.
Ellen, what did you think of that call from Lynn earlier?
Well, you just made me smile with your son.
I know. He's
going
a little,
to the bathroom and undressing.
He's a little so-and-so.
I have a child, 22, who does the same.
Right.
But, yeah, that just made me smile. But as far as the one sent in Reddit with a child with cerebral palsy, I'm sorry, I had a child with cerebral palsy who lost his life recently due to the condition. How dare they compare? They are nothing alike.
I think the point, and I'm sorry for that. How old was it a son that
yeah, he was almost 15, but obviously due to the cerebral palsy and that he was delayed in years. So he was actually about a 4 or 5 year old, yeah. Mentally. He had all the characteristics of a cerebral palsy child.
And when did he pass away, Ellen, if you don't mind me asking?
A couple of years.
Okay, so it's still quite fresh.
It's very fresh. And the movement disorder, the coordination, although he was classed as delayed mentally, he had a very old head on his shoulders. But how anyone can compare the two. I've only caught the last 10-15 minutes of the show due to having visitors.
Well, that's not good enough, Ellen.
No,
I know. That's not good enough. Naughty.
Normally, it's on from morning till night. Okay. I agree with that. But how anyone can compare, I'm sorry.
Ellen, I
cannot agree. They are so different. Yeah,
okay, Ellen, listen,
I can't explain
that. Let's leave it there. I appreciate your call, and I appreciate you telling me about the loss of your son in a couple of years. It's still very fresh, isn't it? So thank you very much for that. Right, last call of the day from me is Ken in Sheldon. Morning, Ken.
Good morning, Ian.
Ken, Ian Brady.
Ian Brady, I would quite happily take a blowtorch to that man. I mean, I heard that lady say that she should do it, but she couldn't do it herself. I could quite happily take a blowtorch and take a toe off at a time, then his feet, then at his knees, then his hands, then his eyes. I could quite easily stand there and do that. And I would go to sleep at night and have a good night's sleep afterwards, because that man is an animal.
You could quite happily, without any qualms, you could torture a 75-year-old man.
Yeah, I could do it quite easily, because he's an animal. I'd put a rope around his neck, I wouldn't give him a hood, and I would stare at him in his eyes and say, "I'm going to pull this lever now."
All right, let's not get into too graphic details. We have got young ears listening. But Ken, do you know what it takes?
You asked the question, Ian.
I know I did. Yeah. And I'm asking another one. Do you know what it takes to take someone's life?
Yes.
How?
I was in the armed services.
Well, there we go. That changes things slightly. So I'm glad that was your answer and it wasn't something else. Ken, thank you very much indeed. I think we just stayed on the right side of graphic descriptions there. Well, listen, that's it. That's your lot. That's my first week. Thank you so much for making me feel so welcome. And thank you to everyone here that's helped me out. I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I hope you did as well. I'll be filling in for Nick for the next few weeks, and hopefully you'll be making me feel as welcome as you did then. Do stay tuned, though. Coming up, it's Tammy Gooding, which is got to be worth a listen, hasn't it? Of course it has. This has been Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6. Coming up next, it's the news, of course.